school and finding a valuable thing to participate in.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right.
And I just wanted to say, I was sharing the story about Tiesin Sminiti, the young student from Grover Mitch Elementary School who had gone back to Washington, D.C. as part of the leadership program, and just was sharing that positive things coming out of our community. And Lloyd shared with me this individual, and I asked that he'd come and share it with the rest of you today.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Is there anyone in the audience, anyone else, who'd like to speak on any item that's not on the agenda? Seeing none, we'll go on to the consent agenda. Does anyone want anything pulled?
I'd like to pull 4 for separate consideration.
I'd like to pull 1, please.
Okay, do I have a motion to accept 2 and 3?
I move approval of 2 and 3.
I'll second that.
On a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Scholz, seconded by Councilmember Ekbom. A roll call vote, please.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay, Councilmember Lieberman, item 1.
Thank you. On the disbursement list dated 7/29, there's a check related to the Santa Maria Valley Water litigation issue of $14,600 and some change. And I was just hoping that we could have a follow-up status discussion as to what's going on with that litigation at some point at a future meeting.
We'll bring it before you during the next council meeting.
Thank you very much. That's all I have.
Thank you, sir. Do we need to make those motions separately, or do you want to do it together? One's roll call, one's voice vote.
They should be done separately.
Okay. May I have a motion to accept item 1?
So moved.
Second.
On a motion by Councilmember Lieberman, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Scholz. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Item number 4.
I just wanted to kind of, I looked at this, and I know that we kind of all kind of supported it to start with, but as I looked at this, and this item is an approval for funding for the Stone Soup Music Festival. It's an approval for a mariachi band. It's $1,000 that we get from the community project funds from the from both of our supervisors. It basically comes from a fund that they have, Supervisor Asajin, and Pernard. And the more I look at it, I just have a really hard time voting for $1,000. I know that's not a lot of money when you start talking about the coffers of government, but I think we need to at some point really realistically look at what $1,000. It may not be a lot of money, but I think this is just a slap in the face to the people that pay taxes. I don't think it's an appropriate use of tax funds. If you were talking about $1,000 that went towards a police department or a fire department or public roads or something like that, I could support it, but the more I look at this, I just can't support it, and so that's going to be my vote on this agenda item.
I might want to discuss that a little bit because I personally had not any more discussion.
I'd like to move approval of item 4.
Second.
On a motion by Councilmember Ekbom, second by Councilmember Lieberman. Roll call vote, please.
Yes.
Yes.
No. Yes.
Yes. Moving on to regular business. Proposal for development of a master technology plan.
Honorable Mayor, members of the City Council, you'll recall that back in April of 2003, you adopted 17 community goals. Again, in March of this year, you reaffirmed a smaller number of community goals, a reorganized group. In both cases, one of the primary goals that you had identified was enhancing communication with our community and within the staff and between the staff and the council and the community and the council. One of the areas that was really important that you identified was the ability to have networks and better computer integration. We went out and got proposals, and the proposals were a very wide variety of responses, and we sought the assistance of Terry Ma'a from the city of San Luis Obispo to help us review those. And in the process, Terry came up with some innovative approaches for being able to address our various information technology needs. So that's why Terry is here tonight to explain some of those options to the council.
Good evening, Mayor Santos and council members. Thank you very much for this opportunity to talk to you about something that's near and dear to many of your employees' heart, and that's their information technology infrastructure. My team and I came in a few months ago, and we did a look-see at every department that you have here in the city. And so this report that you'll be seeing this evening is the assessment that we found, our findings, and also then some recommendations on going forward. This is the first time I'm using this little remote control, so this should be interesting. And if not, I'll go to that. You know what? It's not working. It's not even wrong.
Is there a battery in it?
Yeah. Let's see if it'll do this. How about if I just move this closer? This will work.
All right, there you go.
Okay, I'll just do this. Do I have something? Wonderful. Thank you. Two areas that I'm going to discuss this evening is the network, first of all, and then focusing more on the computers which sit on people's desktops. From an overall network perspective, there's been a lot of good things done, especially in your data communication infrastructure. Now, your infrastructure here, I'm talking about the direct connectivity between different office locations. And you have an extensive fiber infrastructure in place here. So your fire department, your police department, city hall are interconnected. And internal to those buildings, you actually have data cabling running to your office locations. Now, the two areas that we saw you would want to consider in the future is the fiber placing, because it's got some age behind it, and it definitely would assist this organization if it was upgraded. This IP addressing a scheme, each house in a community has a unique address so that we can get information for a particular spatial location. Same thing in a network. Every device, a device being a printer or a computer, a plotter, a scanner, has a unique address, and we call it an IP addressing scheme. IP is short for Internet Protocol. So this city really would need to establish that, and it doesn't take a difficulty in establishing it, but it's just something that would have to be addressed. More physical space is required. Right now, there's a lot of equipment being housed in your administrative services area, but they're kind of running out of space, so we'll need to look at how we could rearrange things and gain more space for equipment as we proceed with the network. And then employee training will be a necessity. Anytime you're going to launch any kind of technology, it's really important to train the employees so that you get the full use of the application and the system that's going in. Now, we've identified two solutions or two alternatives. This first one is the unique concept that Ron Anderson was referring to. And this is subscribing to a network service from City of San Luis Obispo. That would mean treating the City of Grover Beach as a remote connection to the City of San Luis. And I'll get into more details about that. The other alternative is the city owning their own network. And many do that, and others outsource. But yours is just a very different, unique situation here. Alternative A. From a network services perspective, the things that are really important to employees to achieve better communication, they want to be able to create a file, create a Word document, create a staff report, and save it someplace. That's the file sharing server disk space. Email, calendaring, web access mail. The ability to send a quick email between a manager and staff, distribute a communication throughout the entire city saying, we have some road conditions in this area and that's going to be down. Even just a technology, voicemail would be down if you have voicemail here in the city, which I know is a second item. So a means of communicating. Network security. all of you and anyone who has a computer at home gets affected by viruses. And so this firewall actually sits between the city and any other agency or entity you connect to. If it was Pismo Beach or the city of San Luis Obispo or Cal Poly or even out to the internet, you want something that's going to prevent someone from intruding on your network. So that's the firewall. We understand antivirus and spam. If you've got a Juno account or anything, even just any email account, we're finding in the city of San Luis Obispo 60% of email coming in is spam. That's a lot of wasted time for employees to go through all of their email and delete it. So if we put a product front end and eliminate that, they're more productive. Email attachment blocking, that assists with the antivirus. If anything looks suspicious coming in, it will automatically block that, not allow it to come through to any employee. And then you get a message saying, host externally. This city does host externally. We found it advantageous to bring that in-house. So, and the virtual private network, that's really a nice word that says it's the ability from home to connect into the city of Grover Beach network, or even if you're on the road, the ability to just, if you get an internet connection in a hotel, to be able to get back to your email and stay in communication back here. So this is the types of services that we're referring to when we discuss network services. The pros of having the city of San Luis Obispo serve up these services is you really get big city services in a smaller city. The servers would be located in San Luis Obispo, but the technician support, which here in the city of Grover Beach, there is no technician on site, and a lot is done through consultation. So having a relationship with the city of San Luis Obispo allows this city to utilize all of these services we just discussed, because all of this exists currently in the city of San Luis Obispo, so you're subscribing to this. We wouldn't be advocating something like this if it wasn't working and working very well for us in the city. And to be honest, our city management is aware of this potential relationship, and they're very supportive of it because they see it as a goodwill. They see it as a win-win situation. A win situation for us because it isn't actually more work for us in the city of San Luis Obispo to bring up another location. To me, I liken bringing the city of Grover Beach online with city of San Luis Obispo as if I would be bringing on a new office location. When utilities and public works split and they went to their new location, I brought them online. Our water treatment plant at Stenner Creek, we got fiber connectivity to them. We brought that whole site online. So it's a similar process, and we do it quite a bit all the time. Now, some of the cons with this, there would be a monthly subscription fee. One could consider, or you can consider, if you want to have the city of San Luis Obispo do technical support for your on-site computers, your on-site servers, and applications, the software running here in Grover Beach. But I'm not proposing that right now because I was thinking we should just limit it to the network services, but not focus on the computer side, but that's certainly your choice. And the other thing that would be advantageous is if we could get two strands of fiber between the city of San Luis Obispo and the city of Grover Beach. And we could do that through perhaps your charter franchise agreement. I know that SBC has fiber that they lease. So there's other ways. And it doesn't have to be a fiber, but if we do have fiber, your speeds are greatly enhanced by having that direct fiber link in the ground. Other ways we've connected up facilities is going with data circuits, having T1 connectivity. So there are other means of connectivity, but the ultimate or the best way would be some fiber connectivity. From a cost estimate perspective, this is absolutely something that both agencies would have to discuss and negotiate what the subscription fee would be. Does it include training? Does it not include training? Does it include the technicians overseeing your infrastructure here, or does it not? So both agencies and council would have to approve this too on both sides. So there's some discussion, but I think this evening we would like that does all of this and actually more. Yes, ma'am.
What would be the cost savings? I know it's just like years ago when we said we needed a fax machine instead of having somebody go up to San Luis daily and that stuff. So where would the cost savings of all of this
be?
Technology?
Okay. I'll get to the next slide that shows what my estimate is for getting your own city owned, and then we can talk a little bit more about that. Okay. Thank you. So the cost, there would be costs associated with keeping current with this technology, and also the network would require technical oversight. Okay? Now here, I started estimating just basically what each of those services would cost this city. And the reason it's the cost it is because we took into consideration what you currently have in your city, in your infrastructure, in your network, that could comprise components of your network. And in totaling all of this up, the $22,000 for email, that would get email for all council members and staff members. The remote access comes actually concurrently with your network security because you would have to have that firewall in place. Your internet monitoring, the $8,500, is primarily software that would reside on a server. And your website hosting, we estimated that if you wanted to bring it in and co-locate it on an existing server. So approximately a little over $50,000. But that, I put the plus recurring costs because that's your one-time costs. And we replace servers about every 3.5 to 4 years. So you have those costs incur. Plus you've got software release upgrades that you'll have to also take into consideration. And the oversight, the technician oversight, is not factored into this either. So you also have consultant fees on top of this. For a network your size, from a staffing perspective, we usually estimate just for technicians to service 100 computers, one technician per 100 computers. But you have a combination here. You would have computers, but you also have servers, and you also have computing systems. So if you look at just even a 3/4 full-time employee, you start adding up the dollars quickly. My budget to run in the city of San Luis Obispo, my operating budget, is $1.3 million. That's significant. That's extremely significant. My responsibilities there in the city of San Luis Obispo are the entire city. I even have the police department responsibilities, too. So we work very closely with them on the 911. We actually do radio systems as well. We do our telemetry, the traffic signals, all the back-end equipment, the servicing of those servers. That is done by my staff. So all of the voicemail, phones, just anything that's electronic, we handle it. All of the setup, too, in council chambers, my staff is not directly, because we work with a person like AGP. But if there's problems, then they call us in to make sure that the projectors, the audio-visual, we do all of that, empowering all the rooms with AV. So we have a pretty extensive budget and lots of experience in putting in computing systems. Mayor Santos, did I answer your question about
the
cost savings? Okay.
Yes.
Any questions about the network before I move on to the desktop side? If you bring in your website hosting, because you'll need a server that sits in what we call the demilitarized zone, it's the zone that you ante up to anybody coming into you from the internet. In other words, that's the side that you say, I'll put my website out here, but if somebody compromises it and kills it, nothing else critical to the city is running on there. It's sitting outside in this demilitarized zone. We'll just repair and rebuild it. But everything is protected on the other side of the firewall, so it sits outside the firewall, but your city is sitting inside the firewall.
I think
so we're growing.
One of my reasons for this is there's a lot of people at home sitting and really don't understand exactly how far technology has come and how far behind we are.
Yes.
And they don't understand the expense of all of this, mm-hmm. but it's so important. If not, we're back in the dark ages.
It's true, because it does improve employee productivity and the efficiency and the ability to service the citizens' needs better. Otherwise, you have the employees focusing on communication, just trying to get a staff report accomplished without email and the ability to move information around freely. It's done in a sneaker net fashion or with hard copy paper. Well, what if somebody's on vacation or they're at a conference? How do you communicate something readily? So it technology, if appropriately applied, is a valuable tool in the hands of the employees, even outside of government, in the private sector as well. But I do agree it has to be a needs assessment performed, and then based on those needs, apply the technology appropriately so it coincides with the job but doesn't overpower the job and isn't the reason for the job. It's there to assist.
Thank you.
On the desk, I'm sorry.
Councilmember Lieberman.
Thank you. Question on technology. Obviously, that's a big pro for the city of Grover Beach to not worry about changes in technology. Mm-hmm. Have you considered in your discussions with the city manager, as part of the subscription fee, does that include server upgrades on the San Luis Obispo side?
It would.
So we wouldn't be responsible for capital for server replacement or upgrade?
It would be included in the subscription fee.
Okay. Thank you.
Is there any other questions right now? No.
Okay. On the desktop side, I'm going to cover two areas, the hardware and the software, and I'm going to change it a little bit in that earlier we were talking about the pros and the cons and then the cost, but now I'm going to actually take a section of the hardware and develop each and just basically give you recommendations in each specific area, and I'll show you what I mean. On the hardware side, you have these components to consider. Your computers, your laptops, your monitors, your printers, your plotters, your scanners, and PDAs. You're probably familiar with Palm Pilots. That falls into your little PDA category, something that you can remotely go and it carries email. If you want it to, it can connect up and carry email, but a lot of people use it just for their schedules, and they use it for addresses and also for phone numbers. Okay. Now, on the hardware side of the house, it is important for the city to adopt standards for the hardware so that you don't end up having, for example, a Hewlett-Packard and an Epson. Not that that's bad, but from a technician standpoint, it makes it a lot easier, and you spend less on the training of processing capabilities, more hard drive, more memory, and that's why you see it reaches that place in 3 to 3.5 years where it's time to move it on. And you can also employ, because there will be areas in your organization, your power users, for example, those who are doing GIS, or in your planning organization that are doing mapping, they'll always need your higher-end computers. So you take that and you trickle down those computers to areas in the organization that maybe the guys only need to get to the email. And every once in a while they're doing a document, but they don't need much processing capability. And I've seen this city do that very well. When I've looked at your city inventory, you have 50 computers in your inventory right now. And they do a good job of moving around, but they really need some assistance right now in replacing them. There's at least 10 right now that need to give up the ghost, or just about half. And what I recommend in the area of monitors and printers and plotters and scanners and PDAs, replace them when they break and they won't function anymore and you can't work with the vendor in resurrecting it. Hardware maintenance programs. Every time you put in a computing system, always take into consideration the maintenance programs and the replacement of it thereafter. Because if you spend $50,000 to put the network in, you've got all this hardware maintenance and follow-on activities that have to happen, and that directly affects your operating budgets. And that's an area that most people forget. But it will eventually, down the line, be something that needs to be planned into your operating budgets. And then surplus equipment, managing it. The city's doing a wonderful job in managing their surplus equipment. As soon as the equipment moves out, they have places where it goes. But there should be at least some kind of policy, if there isn't one already, in moving and dispositioning surplus equipment. And with all of your hardware, with all of your software, there's always that consultant services will be as needed. Now, estimates. Replacement costs, of course, will depend on the policies you adopt and how often you want to replace things. And there will always be consultant fees to set up hardware, whether you send it off someplace or you're paying, let's say, a manufacturer like Dell to load all the software on your computer. But you do pay a cost. It may be hidden, but it's still there. Computers right now, and this is these cost estimates do include the software that would be loaded on there. Anywhere from $2,000 to $3,000 is what we find we budget for. On laptops, $2,500 to $3,500 each. And for monitors, just to give you an idea, a 17-inch flat panel is $500. On the laptops, We tend to use laptops for these for those people who are mobile. City managers, department heads, some managers too. We also have a checkout policy where some people just need it to go on a conference. So IT carries about four laptops that can be checked out throughout the city. But some key people who are on the road quite a bit, the ability to have a laptop, personally, I have that scenario. I have a laptop. It goes with me. If I get a trouble call at home, I pop that laptop up. I'm able to connect directly back to the city. And that makes me very efficient on my job because I can get calls 7x24, especially supporting public safety. They can see that at home. This is wonderful if you're traveling and it's that. It's a lap. You put it on your lap and you can pop up the screen and you have a little screen. But when you're in the office, it is a lot easier for most people to have a larger keyboard, the standard keyboard, and to have a mouse that isn't just a touchpad on the screen or that little eraser type. Some people have eraser little buttons. Or to have the larger screen, especially when you're dealing with large documents, maps, graphicals. It's nicer to be able, you'll get more information on a screen than you will on a laptop. You'll spend a lot of time scrolling through.
Like when they're doing the GIS
yes.
type things.
Yes, because and even
important.
On that, they need a lot of resolution. GIS is what I consider a power user. We typically spend the money for them to have the best monitors and the most computing power that we can get because they need that usually and more. And to put them on, we find about 2.5 years is about when they need it, anywhere from 2 to 2.5 years, and we try to stretch it out to reach that 3-year replacement cycle. But they're going to be your top users outside of dispatch. Your most computing power will be in dispatch, but they're doing a wonderful job in making sure that their employees have the best. But the highest end user are your dispatchers. They have a lot of computing systems running on their systems. And then I would say your GIS folks and your mapping folks. Councilmember Lieberman, did I answer that to your satisfaction?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that if an employee had a laptop assigned to them when they came to the office and docked it, that would mean that there wouldn't be a second computer in their office.
No, that's true. That's true.
Thank you.
Because a laptop is driving the processing. Looking at printers and plotters and scanners and PDAs, this just gives you a rough estimate of generally what you can anticipate. Your desk jets, something you could buy, Best Buy, Costco, started about $179 and go up. Your black and white laser printers, which definitely in financial management systems, mostly this is what we roll out, our laser printers. Black and white, starting at about $800 and going up from there. And your color lasers, we probably got about 4 in the city. But you put it in a strategic location in everyone's network so they can select that color laser if they need it or just stay with a black and white. And your plotters, we've typically, starts at about $12,000 and go up. You have one in your organization. There could come a time, depending on the volume, once you get networked and people have applications they can use at their desk and they start getting more savvy with it, you might have the need to go to 2 plotters because you're going to have such a congestion at your plotters, but that's in time to come. Something I don't think you don't have to deal with now, but in time to come, you need to be aware that that could happen. And your scanners and your PDAs. There are desktop scanners for $150. People use that. When I'm reviewing a draft document and I'm dealing with a consultant and I have a manager hand me something they've written, I can scan that in at my desk, attach it as an email to an email, send it off to the consultant. I have them on the phone. We're discussing the red lines right online. So I don't have to. And PDAs, that's just making it more useful for people to have information at their fingertips. On the software side of the house, I categorize this into 4 items. I want to talk about your citywide applications. That's typically your Office, Microsoft Office. Critical city systems being your financial management system and others. Then there are other city systems for you to consider, too. And we'll talk a little bit about software licensing compliance. it is important for the city here to adopt a standard at the desktop. Right now you have a combination of Microsoft and WordPerfect, Microsoft Office and WordPerfect. It's really important so that documents can flow to decide which one of those you need to be on. I would be a proponent of the Microsoft Office because you have many more in the world using that than you do WordPerfect. Although it doesn't mean if you use WordPerfect, that can't be compatible elsewhere. But you'll find more and more organizations standardizing on Office. And the operating system, too. If you standardize with your Microsoft Office, then you should standardize on Microsoft operating system. The two go hand in hand. Now, there's a lot of discussion about Linux, and there are other operating systems such as Unix. But for right now, because of your technician support and the fact you don't want diversity, you're trying to standardize to make it easier for technical support, which translates into less costs, I would say find one and standardize. And Microsoft has seemed to fit the bill many times. And then consider establishing city images. By city image, I mean users can be allowed flexibility to put desktop images on their backgrounds and add software if they want or not. But because of the size of your city, you might want to strongly consider having one type for maybe an organization. All computers in public works, in the community development area look the same. And everybody in the police department looks the same. So that if you have a computer go down in that area, you can get a computer up and running because you just you've snapshotted an image and you load that image, and this is the police department image. If you don't establish an image like that, it takes a little bit longer to get them up and running because they have a lot of different applications that have to be considered as far as loading it up. So we found this to be instrumental. And we are split. There are some places we have a city image working like this very well for us. Public safety, we found, works extremely well that way, especially in fire because of the shifts, changes. But some other places like City Hall, we haven't. So I think it just depends on your users and the needs. From a critical city system, financial management system. Now, these are some of the things that would help them to process better. If they were going to enable, if you could enable credit card processing after installing wand readers, that would really help processing utility bills and different things that come into the city. Right now, it's all manual entry. But if you wand it, that's very fast. And we would need to increase your license count to allow more than just your administrative services people access into the financial management system. That service and support is expiring, so it is my understanding that you folks are addressing this right now in exploring that last bullet, exploring dispatch regionalization, but you need to be aware of the fact that that service and support is expiring, and the knowledge base, all of the information in your public safety computer-aided dispatch records management system, that knowledge base is very, very important because you've built it over years, so don't allow it to disappear on you. Pay attention to that. And I think they're aware of it, but you just needed to know it too if you weren't aware of it until now. And there is a County Abbey solution, but in talking to the police department, it is lagging at this point. So that's also something I'm sure it's being considered as they look at this regionalization.
Terry, what's the Abbey solution?
The Abbey solution, and the police chief probably could speak more to this, but it is a solution that has been looked at to, let me put it this way. Every agency has their own CAD RMS system. And what would be nice is if you had one that everyone was allowed to use and operate. And let me allow the police chief some opportunity here. Thank you.
The Abbey solution, John Bradbury, chief of police. The Abbey solution is something that we talked about 4 years ago when we brought our dispatch center online. We were part of the group that got together countywide to have a system that had interconnectivity. And what happened was Abbey came up with a solution, but we had our doubts whether it would be connectivity would be available. So we held off, stuck with our system that she talked about, the Tiburon, which we will probably lose service on in another couple of years, and we'll have to decide where we're going to go. Abbey still lacks interconnectivity. And what was important about that was we could dial up in our station for a report out of Paso Robles, and we'd be able to get all the information on that report. The Abbey system is working well as a standalone CAD RMS within the individual police departments, but it doesn't have that interconnectivity. And it was interesting that we were one of the organizers of this, and then we didn't go with it, and they still haven't got it. And part of our capital improvement projects that will be forthcoming, we do talk about CAD and RMS. The system doesn't give us any trouble now. We use very little servicing, so it has a number of years left in it.
Chief, if I could ask a question. When we were at that consolidation workshop, the other agencies, is Abbey also known as a different RMS name that the other agencies were using? Because I'm confused.
No, everybody has gone to that or in the county within the police departments other than San Luis, so it's my understanding that you have an ability to talk to that system. But we stand alone at this point when it comes to the CAD, which is computer-aided dispatching or the records management system.
So all the other agencies went with an Abbey records management system except for Grover and San Luis Obispo? Is it? I'm just trying to...
I'm not sure anyone's online, actually, at this point.
I thought there was some other acronym we were talking about that was going to be X dollars.
That's what it is. It may have a different name, but it is the Abbey group that put this together.
Okay. Thanks, Chief.
It's still...
Conceptual.
Yeah, conceptual. It still doesn't have it.
Right. Thank you, Chief.
Thanks.
Staff go into Aroma Files to try to find information. Now, police has a laserfish system. At the time we were looking at this needs assessment, the server did need some attention. I understand that they're dealing with that. And community development, in talking to the director, they really desire a laserfish system because they see how this could help them in managing the variety of information going through community development. And Fire is using a Firehouse product for their records management system. And that is the version that they're running. It's working well for them, from what I understand. It's working well for them. But it just needs to have a new release upgrade applied to it. Embarking on a records management system is a huge endeavor for the city. And this is something probably in time to come. Your focus right now really needs to be more at the desktop and in achieving a network. All right, and doing the small little fixes for your financial management system and supporting what's going on with the police and achieving their CAD arm, their community dispatch records management system movement. And this is something I would say will come later because it will take and affect your business processes and take a lot of money typically to do a records management system. Just to give you an idea, we have estimated $650,000 in the city of San Luis Obispo to do this. So that's a large dollar amount, okay? And I'm not saying that's what your cost would be, but that tells you because it encompasses the entire city. Now, other systems, as I was going around and talking to your different departments, Parks and Recreation would be well suited by an online registration package. It's not that costly, but it's just a matter of obtaining the budget and then implementing it on their system. Microsoft Access, which actually comes as an application to Microsoft Office Suite. You can purchase it as that way, or you can purchase it standalone. But human resources, their applicant personnel tracking, that would be desirable for them to be able to better manage applicants. Vehicle repair and parts inventory tracking system, I understand they have received the budget to go forward with that, and that would make their job in tracking what's happening with your fleet a lot easier. In time to come, the police department with an in-car video system that would help with officer safety and just the ability for public safety to better do their job. It would really help. And faxing from the desktop, that can be achieved if you put in the network and we do what we need to do at the desktop level, the faxing can come with that too. Now, camera security, this is something for you folks to consider. Surveillance for critical sites, i.e. the train station, the water wells, and lift stations. Now, I understand that the city manager and the economic development manager has also been looking at this for you, so there might be some solutions forthcoming in this area. and you may be aware of it already. And the mobile data computers, that's down the road, but that would be putting computers in police and fire vehicles so that those officers and those firefighters have direct access back into their computer-aided dispatch and records management system, for example, running license plates in the field, or being able to bring up a mugshot if they have just had an incident occur and they have opened the call, and the officer or the firefighter could actually close out the call. And that's procedural, that's business operations, that's something that they would need to see how that works for them. But there is that possibility to have that happen, yes. So on software license compliance, this is important in this city because there are some licenses that exist and some others that we need to find. So an audit just internally of what we have where is important to determine how many licenses actually exist and compare these licenses with what's installed on the software packages, and then also determine what additional software is needed. As you begin to do more on your website, for example, whoever is doing that, whether it be a consultant, and if you decide to bring that in-house and maybe have each department responsible for updating their particular web portion, their particular pages of your website, there would be more tools that they probably would need to be able to get the job done. But that would then, in creating the network, in creating your email, and from the website, potentially website hosting on-site or through the city of San Luis Obispo, and then empowering your departments with the ability to update your website, you have now moved the one portal that you have through the city clerk and distributed it. So that could help. Now, from a cost estimate, for citywide applications, I would recommend looking at the Microsoft Select program, which is state pricing, or using something for everyone's most familiar with, CMAS. And on your critical city systems and your other systems, I would recommend doing a needs assessment first before coming back to you with numbers, because that will vary depending on what you want. It can go, you know, in the tens of thousands. You've heard some of the numbers that I've given you about what the city of San Luis Obispo is doing. But like I said, I don't think you're here yet with your systems other than to fix the little minutia things occurring with the financial management system and getting more software licenses. So at that point, that kind of gives you an idea of what's happening with the network and what's happening with your desktop, your hardware, and your software. Do I have any questions?
Is there any questions of Ms. Mata? Councilmember Arnoldson?
Sorry.
Councilmember Lieberman.
Terry, I appreciate all the information you've shared with us tonight. I'm just wondering what the next step is.
Mm-hmm. We do have a budget of around $75,000, $85,000. We have an item coming up after this where the council could be expending some of that. We have an additional $25,000 or so that we could be appropriating from the planning and inspection fund for a lot of the upgrades that are proposed to occur in the Community Development Department. So we probably have somewhere around $100,000 in this year's budget to proceed with a combination of the telephone, voicemail kinds of technology as well as the networking kind of relationship. We would also, as Terry mentioned, have to look for into different opportunities for getting fiber, for example, between here and San Luis Obispo or a T1 line or something like that. So basically the next step is for the council to say, don't go the traditional route, go the innovative route, or go the traditional route, whichever you're more comfortable with, then we would follow up on what it is that we can do within the resources that we have, and if there's something we really think we need to do and we can't afford, we would come back to council and identify what that is and potential funding options for that.
Have you discussed what you estimate the timing would be to package a fee schedule and approvals from both cities and staff and councils?
No, we have not.
Okay. And Terry, I just had one more of a technical type question for you. So assuming that we went to the satellite relationship with the city of San Luis Obispo, can you explain, and it's for me, so basic terms, how we would treat the server that houses Grover Beach within the city of San Luis Obispo network to protect our records from the city of San Luis Obispo and then vice versa?
Sure. On the server, there is a way to create, and I'll use the term, an organizational unit. So the two reside on the same computer but are separate from each other.
I see.
Okay. So we would create a separate area for the city of Grover Beach, and we would use email to communicate between both cities so that if there is some technical, we're having a problem with our internet email, our service provider is down, you would need to know that. That information would be distributed to both sites.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks. That's all I have.
Councilmember Ekblad.
Thanks for coming down here.
You're welcome.
This is overwhelming for me, I have to tell you. I'm a little nervous when you start talking about replacing so much. So I understand it's a lot over time.
I understand.
A couple of questions, though, is how many cities could San Luis Obispo add on as satellites? Is there any limit?
No, it's just a matter of equipment and software and licenses.
I understand that the some kind of agreement would include replacing your servers as you need them.
We actually do that already. We have a replacement policy in place for doing everything that we discussed here. We actually have that. So with or without the city of Grover Beach, that activity takes place.
Okay.
So you aren't going to be the impetus for us to do that. We're already doing that. You're the beneficiary of what we currently have in place. So you won't have to redevelop the wheel here for what we currently have there. So it will be when we go into discussions with the city, we would definitely want to make sure you have all of these types of areas, and we discuss it and clearly lay it out what that means to Grover Beach.
I can tell you, I can't imagine us going out on our own. So I like this, being a beneficiary of somebody else's efforts.
Not being the forerunner.
My question is kind of, we like to think that we're trying to combine services in the South County. So our Pismo and Arroyo Grande on their own separate networks, are they where we're at now?
So how about we do something just a little different? We'll do a quick assessment and get you numbers so that you can get it into your budget and already start talking about the implementation now rather than making you wait because it's so needed here. And then this different approach was presented to both my city management in addition to having the discussion with this city management. And when both parties shook their head, then we thought it was worthwhile coming forward and saying, what do you folks think? So you will be the forerunner and the pilot program, if you will, to see how this works on the Central Coast. But we do not have an established relationship like this with Pismo or Arroyo Grande or any of the other cities right now.
I understand that, but I'm just wondering if we join with San Luis as a satellite and Arroyo and Pismo say, wait, we have to do something, and they go out on their own, and we were thinking maybe we should have combined with them and to separate from San Luis.
Mm-hmm.
But or all join in on your
and that's
a satellite
too.
Program. Right. I was asking, is there any limit to the size?
Actually not. I mean, there are large networks. Look at the internet. The internet is huge networks all joined together. So there's really not a limit that's other than cost and equipment.
Does this create an additional load for you?
To be honest, in information technology. And that was the first question that we addressed in the city of San Luis Obispo. What exactly does this do? And it's not any different, as I described earlier, as another office location coming online to us. As we're preparing to bring a new facility online right now, in about a year and a half, that's going to co-join our public works and community development in one location. So we're already doing that preparatory work to make that happen. So we actually have done this many times as we've renovated offices or moved locations, bring up sites, bring down other sites. So it's really not that much more overhead from our perspective.
Okay.
because we're going to have to do firewalling and antivirus and spam, and the numbers don't do not cause us to exert more energy in those areas. But the thing you do have to realize, too, is when we upgrade, for example, we're currently a Novell Microsoft hybrid network. So when our city, and which we are planning and preparing for, moves to a homogeneous Microsoft environment, if we're connected, you come with us. So your people then would have to, depending on when this relationship happens and the timing of our upgrade, your people would then move with us every time we make a change. So we would then be having discussions with you in advance as to what this means to your city, what this means to your employees, and the training thereof. And we did talk about that too. If the city of San Luis Obispo is doing training, then if the city of Grover Beach needed training, they would come along with city employees and get the same training if that's what you so desired.
I guess one of the... Did you have something there?
I was just going to say that over a year ago, we did sit down with the county of San Luis Obispo. The county has provided a department automation specialist to the city of Arroyo Grande, and we for Pismo both. And the proposal that Terry is talking about, the thing that was most intriguing to me was really looking at the cost of fractional employees, a little piece of a lot of different folks who can provide the full range of specialties that would be necessary in order for us to operate in the same way that any department or any individual entity in a larger city would operate, and just pay their fair share of those kinds of costs. And so that's why this concept looked more attractive to us. And we did start with the concept of trying to see if there was something that we could do in the South County area in a cooperative nature, as we've been successful in other kinds of activities.
I guess I have a little concern, and that is I certainly don't want to be somehow held hostage to replacing software as you decide you need it. We have to follow along. Mm-hmm. Or it bothers me a little bit when I see we have to replace computers every 3 years. Mm-hmm. You have a lot more money than we do.
That's true.
We make things
That's
last
true.
Longer.
Absolutely.
If joining in with you requires us to meet your standards, or then we are almost hostage to it. We are forced to follow along certain directions.
Yeah, and that would be not at your desktop level.
Well, I understand
wouldn't
that.
Have to.
That was a poor example.
But at your operating system level for the servers, yes. But also realize that I have a lot of users that we minimize impact because we don't want to have them go through a lot of gyrations. I mean, that's actually our goal, is what can we do to keep the users running, add features, but not cause impact to the way that they're doing their business. In fact, our goal is to empower them with more enhancements and more tools. We actually have them at the place where they're asking us to do things because it's for their benefit. So, but I understand the concern about you're having to follow after the city of San Luis Obispo and what costs that would be incurred. But I would recommend then let's write that into the agreement between both cities and take into consideration all these concerns. And what does that mean? Because then you're locked, the subscription fee is what it is, and then we have the clear understanding of what you folks are receiving from a service from a service perspective. No different than when you're turning on your phone line and I want these services or I don't, so you know exactly what you're paying for and when that could impact you, so that nothing surprises you on the other side.
Thank you again for your efforts here.
You're welcome.
Of course.
Councilmember Arnoldson, have I been there already? Do you have any questions?
No, I had some comments, so I just kind of wanted to say that this is a new, innovative, old concept. Yeah, because you may not remember, we were a part of a JPA that shared a computer system 8 or 9 years ago. We just disbanded that. It was a system that Aurora Grande, Pismo Beach, Grover Beach, and Oceano all shared in. But we all were too smart to continue with that. We were just all that down the road, we're going to need to look at as a county. I think we should have a county server or what, I mean, a major vendor, whether it be the county of the city of San Luis or somebody. But this is something I think we really need to look at because it is so imperative that servers and computers be replaced. And from our own standpoint, it's impossible. If we could do it on a larger scale, it'd be a lot less expensive. So I think this is a place to start and maybe not the place to end. I think it's a real possibility that we, like I said, have a countywide computer system.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Schultz.
Well, how do I follow that? Terry, thanks for sharing the information. I think Councilman Greg Baum had talked about earlier. Boy, this is a lot of information for us to digest this evening. I do have a question regarding, will there be opportunities to, let's say, share hardware when you've looked at the systems in place in the city of San Luis and the systems in place in Grover? Is there enough of a gap that maybe some of your surplus equipment could pass through to the city? Are there opportunities for that?
There are opportunities for that. And okay. Where it seems appropriate, I don't think either agency would say that they would not be open to that concept.
Okay. Great. And the other thing I wanted to get to was, I know it was in your presentation, but I'm wondering at some point if we could get maybe a matrix that says, this is what we recommend baseline, because I think you said we have 50 computers,
yes.
10 which need upgrading.
Yes.
We have interconnectivity problems where PD needs to connect to City Hall, and we needed to make a decision about the courtyard. So I think if we had something that kind of broke it down even further so that folks up here and folks at home could understand, this is the base level of
sure.
upgrades we need to do to come into this century
yes.
as
yes.
far as technology goes.
Actually, staff has done that. I mean, we provided the initial report as far as your computers are concerned to staff. They have subsequently taken that information and then applied some logic as to what they would recommend replacing now and what they foresee into the future. So I'm sure maybe I should let the city manager speak to that.
Yeah, we do have such a spreadsheet, and we'd be happy to provide copies to the council.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
You're quite welcome.
I think this would be an awesome thing, and I know both Steve and John are very much computer-wise. But I know our staff out there, the department heads, would love this. It would save so much time. From the police department, the fire department, it's a necessity anymore. It's we're in the dark ages. We need to move on. And I know in speaking with our community development director, all the information that could be saved and used for many different and the hours. And I know the rec department would love to have something like this. So there's many uses that we could have this for. And I think it's time for us to take that big step and do it. My only little question is, in today's world with all this fine technology, what happens when the power goes out?
You better make sure you're backed up, and you need to have uninterruptible power supplies and hopefully some generators too. Typically, your public safety has generators that take care of that system, so that is absolutely...
I'd like to take a shot at some recommended action and see if we could provide direction to staff to initiate the process to what I would call the recommended option, which would be contract services, for lack of a better word, with the city of San Luis Obispo. Let's see where that goes.
There's a motion on the floor. Is there a second?
Second.
Any other discussion? Could we have roll call, please?
Yes.
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 Definitely yes.
Okay, moving on to item 6, award of contract for the lease.
I have a question for Ron. Ron, how many times have you heard that with every new system is going to save so much staff time? But always end up with more staff.
You know, I guess that's why I said it's the dog chasing the tail, because you never get caught up on technology, and you're always in the dark ages. I mean, I've heard that for 20 years now, and it never gets any better, and it never will, because the city is never going to be financially solvent enough to afford all the technology that we not necessarily need, but we can provide ourselves. That's my personal opinion. I don't see that we're going to.
Every system is going to save so much time and be so wonderful.
It saves staff time, and it saves.
Well, I'll just make it simpler for you guys. Yep. When you buy a vehicle, it had all these little gadgets on it. 5 years down the road, it doesn't have all those little gadgets. It has newer gadgets to tell you where you're going, what temperature it is, and all this other stuff. So technology changes.
So, but do you really need it to get down the road? Do you really need it? My 1956 T-Bird will get me to Las Vegas as quick as your new car will, and that's the name of the game.
It doesn't have a TV in it, though, and it doesn't have the temperature control.
Boy. I think the...
So, we'll move on.
Can I jump in here real quick? Yeah. I think... The bottom line is we're talking about efficiencies and staff being more productive, but I think the bigger issue is providing access to the community. I heard Terry talk about paying with credit cards. We're doing some of that in building, in issuing of building permits, but I think technology will enhance how the folks in this community have access to the service, and I think that's the bottom line. And, yeah, we're not going to be leading edge, but we do have to at least be competitive, and I think that's why I was asking the question of what is the base information that, or hardware that we can get, or upgrades that we can get to at least make us competitive. I'm not saying let's be the leading edge, but let's certainly find a way to share resources. And I think it's about the community. It's about access to these services.
Okay.
I didn't get my turn. I think to comment to what Dave and Ron said, I think the biggest thing is you guys and all of us, hey, everyone gets a turn. We've approved
it's the guys,
systems.
People.
Hey, Mayor, I heard you throw in your two cents. We've approved systems, but we've never, ever networked the systems. We've never had allowed employees in different departments to communicate with each other.
That was what the new system 8 years ago was going to do.
It never happened. So what you have instead are you have these systems that are standalone systems, and they've never accomplished the tasks they were set out to do. So
that's why we went away from the mainframe.
I think Grover Beach has neither right now, and as you know, you authorized us to hire Larry Lichty, who's a consultant in the area of telecommunications, to come up with some alternatives for us. We've actually gone through a competitive process, and Larry's here and can explain exactly what kind of proposal is before you, the recommended solution, and what the costs for that are, and we have come up with a financing option that includes lease purchasing, spreading the cost out over a period of 5 years. And there are even some further efficiencies and cost savings that Larry says that as we go about implementing it, if this is council's will, then that he could achieve additional savings through the actual implementation. So I would like to suggest that we have Larry come up and explain that at this time.
Madam Mayor, Council members, my name is Larry Lichty. I am an independent consultant to a number of cities, several here on the Central Coast, I'm proud to say. You probably recall we began this project fall of last year, I believe, and just to give you a little background, in order to obtain the information that we needed, we did a physical survey of everything that was in place, including telephones, users. We talked to the users. We talked to management. We got good input from everybody. I think the city had already recognized that there is a problem with the lack of voicemail today. There are some key items that I want to bring out. There's a number of benefits. There's a number of features that we can talk about. But the city does have a policy, through Ron, that phones are answered live. So we look at the voicemail system as a support system to that. The system can provide a number of features. You probably are familiar with most of these because voicemail is a common piece of equipment out there. Sometimes it's confusing, but the system itself is really a call processor. It will allow you to take messages. It will give you an automated attendant function and so forth. The system that you have in place that provides citywide telephone service today is from Pacific Power, from SBC, is known as Centrex, as you're familiar with. And the voicemail system will integrate with that. It will be providing a... it's provided by a company who probably is a leader in voicemail systems today. I think they have like 160,000 systems out there today by Active Voice, which is now the NEC product line. We saw the need, obviously, for voicemail. I think you had all the bullets in your report there, but that's going to provide a number of things. Business, as it is today, doesn't begin at 8 and end at 5. So you have the ability to take messages prior to 8 o'clock and messages after 5 o'clock. I know personally men just dumping them in the voicemail box. So there's a little PR there with that part of it. You also have the ability to broadcast messages. This system is an Active Voice system. It's based on Windows-based system. And when you do establish your network that Terry had so eloquently talked about earlier, you'll have the ability to interface. The system comes with 25 seats of what sometimes is called unified messaging, and that means that you can view your screen, you can look at your emails, you can see that you have voicemails, you can interact with your voicemails. It's a sort of a one-stop type of thing that you can do with that. Now, in going through this, one of the things that we felt was important is the notification of a message. If I call you and leave a message, it's kind of good that you know that I left you a message. One option is available to you is what's called a stutter dial tone that comes from the phone company. You don't know you have a message, though, until you pick up your phone, and you'll hear that beep, beep, beep. And that's okay. It's just that if you're not interacting with your phone that day, you're not going to know that you have a message. So we strongly recommend the visual indicator. That's a little red light that flashes on your phone that tells you you have a message. The phones that we looked at them from several different ways here in the city. First off, do any of them have that capability? The answer is no, they don't. The phones are mostly, or in fact, all your phones are off-the-shelf phones. They're functional. They're functional if you have a home office or a small office, but as you get larger, you need that interaction and call processing, which was the other thing we looked at. During busy periods, the call processing really requires a little more ability with the telephone. So we presented that as an option. Let's look at that. What would the cost be if we upgraded the telephones? Telephones that will integrate with the voicemail system, telephones that will give you a little better call processing than you have today. So those are also included in there. I think I've highlighted most of the things. There are a number of features. If you have questions on, I can answer. The system is based on an 8-port system. We originally had specified 12 hours of storage, but it actually has much, much more than that. It's up in the 40s or 50s that was presented to us. So that is your system in a nutshell, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Is there any questions? Yes, sir. Councilmember Lieberman.
Two questions. The first is when the handsets are all standardized and an employee is going to lunch, for example, will they have the ability to forward their extension to a live body? So Ron's policy of a live voice answering, if I call Donna's extension and by fluke she actually takes a lunch break, is someone else going to pick up her line, or is it going to go straight to her voicemail?
The forwarding arrangements that you have today generally allow for that, and I would recommend that we keep that. Usually when you go to a voicemail, I know Ron and I agree on that we'd like to see that call physically transferred to voicemail. Now, after hours, or we know there's going to be situations where there's just no coverage. If Donna's backup gets up and leaves, then you need to have somebody answer the telephone. This system also has the capability.
I'm trying to think of it. You know, we're unique in that we have a dispatch center that's open for the city for any emergencies. But if we took that out of the equation for this example, maybe Kathy Pecker's got a huge rec event coming up over the weekend, and something happens at the last minute. A vendor can't show up for Saturday morning. Is there a feature where that vendor calls into Kathy's extension and gets her voicemail, and then she could configure it to be alerted
yes.
to a pager or a phone?
Yeah,
or
there's an urgent message. I should be real familiar with it because we just put the same system in the city of Arcadia, and those were features that we implemented. And, yeah, the you just simply say that if this call's urgent, I think the feature is dial star nine, and it will call her home. It will call her pager. She will never, ever be able to get away from the phone again. So.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Councilman Brackbaum.
Mr. Lichty, I'm going to vote against this whole thing. If the phone system starts out with, if you have a rotary phone, touch 1, oh. press 2 if you don't, and if you want it in English or Spanish, press 3, and then it bounces you around for 10 minutes. If there's not going to be a live person answering this phone, I'm not in favor of it.
You and I agree on that. That's what we call corrupting the system when you do that.
Okay.
That's called call avoidance. And no, Ron.
Call avoidance. I like that.
Ron made that very clear in the very beginning that he did want live answering, so that's not going to happen. Now, can it happen? Yeah, it can creep into the system. That's why you have to kind of administer the system.
Well, after hours or something. But
after hours, definitely, yeah.
But to start with, and then they can send you off to a voicemail somewhere or other, but it isn't going to be this long thing that we all hate, just hate.
No, I experienced
okay.
those too.
Okay.
Hit zero. Hit zero as soon as you hear that.
Councilmember Arnoldson?
No questions, no comments.
Mayor Pro Tem Scholz.
Yeah, I want to kind of ask the question that you had asked of Terry earlier. I hope you don't mind. Mr. Lichty, I know you've worked with several cities. Have you worked with cities the size of Grover Beach? And if you have, can you tell me where do we fall with respect to cities that have voicemails and don't? Can you think of any other cities that are operating without a voicemail system?
No.
Okay.
I have worked with a number of cities of varying sizes. Morro Bay is my client. City of San Luis Obispo is my client. City of Solvang is my client. And I don't know of any cities today that don't have some form of voicemail. And actually, to be honest with you, the implementation of a voicemail in a situation where you don't have it is simpler than if we're doing an upgrade because we have changes in the programs and so forth. Voicemail is not quite like PCs where you're probably not going to be changing it out. Usually we see them going 5 to 7 years. Terry would have to back me up on this, but I think San Luis has had theirs for 8 or 9 years now, so. It's all in picking a good product up front, seriously.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
I think one of the nicest things about this will be the fact is that when a message is called in here to the city. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak on this item?
So will you be calling in English or Spanish?
Los dos.
Sí, whatever that means.
In both. Okay. If there's no other discussion, may I have a motion?
I move the staff recommendation.
Second.
Okay, and a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Scholz, second by Councilmember Lieberman. Could we have a roll call, please? Oh, excuse me, we can have a voice vote.
Okay. Could we have a little discussion? I'm sorry, I forgot something.
Okay.
And that was just the financing of it. I'm in favor of supporting the issue, but rather leasing it. Is the purpose of that to free up more money for the previous agenda item, basically? Or?
Yes. basically, it would be a lease purchase, so that at the end of the term, we would own the equipment. It's not that we're... would just be leasing it indefinitely, and it would basically, again, Larry has indicated that as we actually go about implementing it, there may be some technical areas where there can be savings of maybe $3,000 to $8,000, for example. Some of the costs that we're talking about are one-time in nature, the vast majority, and some of them are ongoing. And all of those one-time in nature kinds of things, we can be doing lease purchase, and that will free up more money to be able to have the kinds of activities that you gave us direction on the previous item.
I do see there's a $11,000 annual expenditure for this. Is that?
Yeah, it's right
that
around.
That is above the lease purchase amount.
Yeah, it's right around $10,000. The number that we're looking at of reducing the 68.1 down to 15.7, that was based on lease purchase, the whole first year amount, some of which may be one time. And since there's obviously less than a year left in terms of implementation, that number would be more like $5,000 that would not be financed, and the amount that would be financed is going to be something less than the lease purchase cost would be something less than the $15,000. So we're probably in the same neighborhood of $15,000 to $16,000 in the first year for implementing it, and on an ongoing basis around $10,000 plus whatever that lease cost is, which would be somewhere around $10,000 also.
We didn't hear anything about interest rates or anything. I don't know what kind of money you are paying for not purchasing outright.
Gayla Chapman, Administrative Services Director. The interest rate from discussing it with the loan company is approximately 4.5%.
4.5%?
I will be stepping down.
Thank you. And the mayor's conflict is
my business
owning
is
the
close
business in the proximity.
Yes.
Martin, do you also want to explain that this is an item that we've heard before, but to kind of treat it legally, we're going to review it again tonight. Is that?
That is correct. I was going to allow the mayor and the mayor to leave. This item is before you again due to the fact that there was an additional conflict of interest identified during the last presentation, which was identified by Mayor Pro Tem Scholz. Therefore, the three of you will deliberate this item anew in order to provide staff with direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. This is item number 7. It's the South County Skate Park status report. It's the staff report will be given by Kathy Petker, who is our recreation manager. The city will receive an update on operational adjustments implemented at the South County Skate Park and the alternatives regarding hours of operation and funding sources. Kathy?
Mayor and City Council members, the Parks and Recreation Department, the YMCA, and the Skate Park Advisory Board have all been working in partnership for operations at the skate park, and the group has been working on ways to identify cost-saving tasks in order to continue further reduction of the subsidy at the skate park operations. Provided in the staff report are the tasks that the team has been working toward to reach this goal, and staff would be happy to identify these goals if you'd like me to go into further detail, but at this time, staff is recommending that the City Council continue current operations at the skate park.
Questions of Kathy? Dave?
I have, Kathy, I was confused at this last time also. You say continuing the current operations at the skateboard park, but in here you're also saying you're going to close it Monday through Thursday. That's not continuing it. That's what I don't. What are you proposing?
How can I address this issue if I can't refer to the last discussion? Or may I?
Well, you may simply present
Okay,
the item. and respond to the question.
Well, one of the options of the skate park was to modify the hours Monday through Thursday closure. However, the recommendation is not to do that. We want to continue current operations, which is leaving the skate park open every day except for Mondays during the academic school year.
Okay, that's not what I'm reading here in this physical impact. That's why I'm so confused.
Right.
Fine. I'm right. In favor of continuing it as is right now. So,
Mayor, if I could perhaps try to succinctly explain. When we were putting the budget together and when we were looking at the contract 100 days ago or so with the YMCA, we came up with a number, a shortfall, in the neighborhood of $37,000 or something like, which was a total cost if we were operating every single possible minute, and that was the basis that we used for negotiating an hourly rate with the YMCA, and that's how I think we got confused when we originally were talking about this. We now, if we apply that hourly rate to the number of hours that we normally would expect to be open, we would come up with only, and recognizing the various revenue that we have been experiencing, we would find that the difference is in the neighborhood of $13,000, which is $7,000 below the $20,000 that you appropriated of general fund subsidy, and $24,000 less than the number that was the problem in that we when we were talking about this last May or June.
I'd like to direct staff to continue current operations at the skate park.
Well, this is a regular business item, so we might want to open it up to the public in case there's any public communication at this time before we move on to council action.
Great point.
Is there anyone in the if you guys are finished with your questions? Any more questions to staff? Anybody in the public that would like to speak at this item would be welcome to come to the podium at this time. Seeing none, Steve?
I'd like to take staff's recommended action and direct staff to continue current operations at the skate park.
And that is open Tuesday through Sunday.
Correct.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. This is just kind of, okay, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Kathy.
We had a couple of skateboarders in the audience earlier. I'm sorry they had to go home. I suppose it was too late. But,
I don't like skateboards, though.
Yeah.
Moving on to item 8, proposed resolution to initiate a text amendment to the City of Grover Beach Municipal Code, establishing methodology for calculating value of structures that require infrastructure improvements and fire sprinkling installation.
Mayor, members of the Council, Jake Raper, Community Development Director, City of Grover Beach. Before you is a resolution which initiates a text amendment to the Grover Beach Municipal Code that will begin the process for establishing new methodology and possibly increasing the value that is currently existing within our municipal code. As attached to the staff report, we do have copies of the undergrounding requirement as well as the installation of curb gutter and sidewalk associated with new development and expanding of existing structures within the community. There's a number of discussions and dialogue relating to the low value that was established in 1990. Requiring that value of $45 per square foot for structure 30 years old or newer, and decreasing that value by $5 per every 5-year increments that the structure exists. This results in many of the remodelings and expansion of existing structures to cause the installation of infrastructure within the community. So the initiation of the text amendment would give staff direction to begin reviewing that process and coming back as part of an ordinance amendment, first to the Planning Commission for their public hearing. They would make a recommendation to the City Council. City Council would conduct a public hearing on the methodology recommended by the Commission, and the City Council would take action at that point. So this is the first step in a process that they want to ensure that infrastructure is incorporated with the new additions, because the value becomes much, much less and the replacement becomes much higher. So the balance, when almost they do almost anything, they would require the installation of curb gutters and sidewalks. That's what I would view. But that's on my own speculation, and I don't know if that was the reasoning behind that declining scale. But we'll investigate the value valuation methodology and bring back recommendations to the council, to the Planning Commission and City Council.
Just from my own point of view, it seemed like that just doesn't make sense to me, no matter how no matter what that point of view was, because it doesn't seem to hold water when you have your house appraised. You know, many times they don't look at the age of it; they just look at you. Mm-hmm. Your house is a two-bedroom, two-bath. It has so many square feet, and you're on such and such size lot, and a house two doors down with the same amenities sold for such and such. That's what your house worth is worth, and it doesn't necessarily always incorporate the age of the home. So it seems very artificial to me, I guess.
And as we do our investigation, that whole methodology may drop out, and we may bring back something that many of the other communities are utilizing to determine value.
Thank you, Jake.
Yes, sir.
Mayor,
yes.
I thought so. Ron, I think that part of it was that they were trying to depreciate the value of the useful life of something that if you've had it for 30 years, now it's maybe worth less to you or something. Anyway, I had a question about lost it. One of them was, is this an appropriate time to bring up the other subject that's controversial out there right now, and that is requiring one property owner to upgrade the water line for the whole block or something? Remember that issue up on Atlantic?
I remember it very well.
Well, I think we're missing the boat there somehow, too. And I don't know if that could be tied into the same discussion.
In fact, the city manager, myself, the public works supervisor or superintendent, and many others have dialogue in terms of philosophy and policy recommendations. And I think that one should be a separate issue, just because of the complexity of it. And it may be very similar as we get back into it once we make that recommendation as to establishing policy and or ordinance to really establish the criteria for expansion.
And it doesn't need to go to the Planning Commission, so we would be bringing that directly to the council.
Okay. It was just a point that it's working with permits or new development and cost to the person.
Right.
The other thing I was going to mention was that I thought that the whole purpose of changing these rates is trying not to discourage small remodels. Portions of your house, adding a bathroom or something, shouldn't trigger undergrounding of utilities and curb gutter and sidewalk.
We'll open this up to the public. Is anyone in the public that has any questions of this report? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council.
I would move the recommended action to direct staff to prepare and adopt a resolution initiating a text amendment to the City of River Beach Municipal Code establishing methodology for calculating value of structures that require infrastructure improvements, fire sprinklers, and undergrounding of utilities.
I'm going to second that and have some discussion.
Okay. have discussion first? Discussion?
Okay. I wanted to commend staff for bringing this back to us so quickly. I think it is definitely something that needs to be addressed, and this has come up with respect to the fire sprinkler ordinance, and it's also come up with the requirements for undergrounding and when sidewalk, curb, and gutter is required. I just wanted to make sure that, contrary to what some people are saying and contrary to what some people are believing, that this council has heard the residents. We want to encourage you to improve your properties, and I think this is one step in resolving that issue. I think we are trying to show that we can accomplish a couple of things, and the first is to get this community safer as quickly as we can, which Councilman Lieberman has mentioned several times. But I think the other issue that it shows is that we are trying to find ways to encourage improvements. And if it means going back, taking a look at how we value structures, I think Councilman Arnelson talked about this earlier. When that insurance company looks at that house, their replacement value is not $45 a square feet. I can tell you that with a great amount of certainty. And so there are some trouble spots in the code, and I think this is the first step in doing that. So I think we could accomplish those two goals. And I support this recommendation. And after we take action on this, I'd like to maybe throw an idea out there to the rest of the council members. But I wonder, let's take a vote on this, and then I wanted to kind of bring up an idea that I had.
Okay. May we have roll call, please?
Yes.
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 Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Scholz?
Yes. One thing that I think Councilman Lieberman had mentioned this at one of our prior meetings, and I've had some time to think about it, and I think that what I'd like to see is if I can get some support up here is that we form a committee to take a look at those portions of the zoning ordinance or the municipal code that has caused people a lot of grief and heartburn. And I can't tell you how many times while I was walking the neighborhood 2 years ago and just last Friday, I had a lady who bent my ear for about an hour relaying a horror story and dealing with this city. I think there are some impediments to people improving their properties, and we can improve that because we certainly want this to be a partnership. So I would like to see if there's support to maybe form a committee, even if we started with the Blue Ribbon Committee from Community Development and Building, and then maybe we add a member from this council. I would be happy to volunteer my services and maybe a member from the Planning Commission so that we can meet.
Any type of thing?
Well, that would be something that the council could deliberate on at the time that the item is agendized. If it is an ad hoc committee simply put together for the purposes of resolving some existing issues and then disband once those are done, they could meet without the Brown-up requirements. If it was a standing committee with formal appointments, it would be a public meeting.
Okay. So we can discuss that at the next meeting when it's agendized.
Okay, we are going to take a 10-minute break.
We stand it up.
Yes. Effective date of the required installation of fire sprinklers. Chief Fiebig.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of council. I'm Terry Fiebig. I'm the fire chief of the city of Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande. We're back this evening to, for the fourth time, to discuss the ordinance that would require the installation of fire sprinklers. And what we're back for this evening is the second reading of, as you mentioned, the ordinance number 4-11. And this ordinance basically is the same as the ordinance went out originally, with the exception of the fact that we have changed the effective date. The effective date has been changed in answer to a number of inquiries that came to the City Council and to staff regarding people that might be in process for an application, that might have a project underway but didn't have their plans in yet, and this was meant to give those folks an opportunity to get their work completed and get it to a point where they could submit it to the city formally with plans and apply for a building permit. The effective date, the new effective date of this would be January 1st, and with that, I turn this back to you for the second reading of the ordinance.
Is there any discussion? Any questions of staff's report?
I wanted to ask Chief Hibik one question just to make this entirely clear. So if someone has their plans approved and have a building permit before January 1st, they still abide by the ordinance that is in place at this point?
That is correct. The new ordinance does not take effect till January 1st, 2005. And if anyone were to get their appropriate work submitted by that time prior to January 1st, then the old threshold would take precedent.
Which at this time is 5,000 square feet for a commercial building or any building, I guess.
For anyone in the audience that would like to speak on this item. Seeing none, I will bring it back to council. If there's no more discussion.
I got to make a statement just that okay. I'm going to vote against this, even though I agree with postponing this ordinance. I'd like to postpone it about 10 years. But I'm voting against it because of the small square footage, 1,000 square foot, and the impact it has on remodels.
Okay. May I have a motion?
Yeah, I move that we open the public hearing, consider testimony, conduct second reading of ordinance number 0411 by title only, and adopt the ordinance as presented.
Second.
Okay. We did open the public hearing.
Okay.
And we closed the public hearing. Okay. Could we have a roll call, please?
Yes.
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 No.
No, and for the same reason that David
said previous. Thank you, Chief.
I thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Moving on to item 10, Citizens Option for Public Safety COPS Grant for fiscal year 5.
Honorable Mayor, members of the City Council, John Bradbury, Chief of Police. And we're here tonight to talk about the $100,000 state COPS grant. We're in that process of that time of the year where I come forward with recommendations, hopefully to get your approval so we can encumber our $100,000 for the year. Some of these items have already been discussed in the budget, but one of the things I'd like to talk about for a moment is how we spent the $100,000 last year. You can see it was broken down with overtime for sworn and non-sworn personnel and for a dispatcher. That totaled $88,000. Most of that was overtime. Then we also spent $12,005 on equipment, supplies, and services. And that had to do with radar units and with a server. And that was mentioned earlier in the evening that we purchased a server. Where we'd like to spend the money in this coming year. Again, as is already listed in our budget, we're looking at a police officer. This position hasn't been filled, but it gives you a breakdown of what the costs are for a police officer. We can go to item number two. A dispatcher. And we do have that dispatcher, and you can get an idea of the costs. And, of course, if you added these all together, you'd say, guess what, Chief, you've overspent the $100,000, and I realize that. So there is some manipulation that goes on by not hiring people. The $100,000, when they gave us that a couple of years ago, was enough to cover both a dispatcher and a police officer, and that's no longer the case. We can go to item number three. Item number three are two computers, one for the records, property evidence supervisor. We've taken over a lot more servicing of our citations that used to go through the county. The county would process them into the DMV system. That's no longer done. We have to do it at our level. So we need some computers that can carry that program. And the other is, since we now have a new lieutenant, that computer that has been sitting idle for almost 4 years now no longer meets the need. So we'll have a computer there. Item number four, we can go to that. People move about. There's a lot of information out there, a lot of information that's in systems that are outside of the government. This is a system that helps identify people based on their Social Security numbers and utility bills and property tax bills and how to track them down. $18,000 a year enables us unlimited queries. A lot of this...
I think you mean $1,800,
I'm sorry,
Chief?
Yeah. $18,000 would be very pricey. $1,800 a year allows us to run as many names as we want. There are systems that you pay so much a month, and then they limit how many people a year. It's not cost effective. We do a lot of this when we're doing backgrounds on people, but also when we're tracking down suspects. Pismo Beach has this system already, and they speak so highly to my detectives. They made a real appeal that we need to give it a try. This would allow one of the administrators and the two detectives to have access to this system. And one more. Oh, assuming that we don't hire a police officer, we hire a dispatcher, we get the computers, we get the tracking system, there's money left over, and that would go to overtime. If I don't hire the police officer, I'm short people, so we pay our current folks to backfill that. And that's the way, how we're recommending that we spend the $100,000 this year. Do you have any questions?
Is there any questions to the chief? His report?
Appreciate your time.
Is there anyone in the audience that has any questions? It is a public hearing. No one in the audience? We'll close the public hearing, bring it back to council.
There's no further discussion. I would move we adopt the resolution approving the allocation of the COPS funds grant.
Is there a second?
Second. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And a motion
I'm just
by
laughing about him. Didn't your mother talk to you about that? You don't talk with your mouth full?
This is the only place I could get a good meal.
Okay. On a motion by Councilmember Arnoldson, seconded by Councilmember Lieberman. A roll call vote, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Mayor Santos, he's looking at me.
Only because you're talking with your mouth full.
Steve's right, you know. Report, there was nothing really happening in Sand District. Oh, except with the exception of Councilmember Arnoldson, I think the tentative date for the barbecue for board members is the 15th of September. Okay, sitting on to city manager's agenda. None at this time. City attorney's agenda, 11, follow-up report and informational consultant of Measure O.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, members of the council. At the last meeting, the council directed staff to obtain information and possibly some proposals for obtaining services of consultants to assist the city in informing the public of the effects of the passage or non-passage of Proposition 004. We have been in contact with two separate consultants. We have this afternoon received a proposal package from one of them. The other one has not provided us with a response. The package has been distributed and is in front of you for your review. It is combined effort of two separate groups. Fairbank, Maslin, Mullen & Associates are a polling service. They are experts in doing public polls in order to assist in focusing the information flow. The Lou Edwards Group are the public relations consultant who would basically be doing the work of informing the public based upon the polls that would be conducted by the other organizations. Their proposal is a joint proposal. It sets out numerous cities and counties, other public agencies that they have worked before, including the city of San Luis Obispo. They have a 90% success rate in their efforts. The proposed fees for the services are outlined in two options. One is a $35,000 package, 15 of which is a baseline survey, 20,000 of which is the services of the actual consultant. Option B is a more expensive package of $50,000, with 20,000 being the baseline survey and 30,000 in strategic services by the public relations consultant. These prices do not include hard costs, those being the costs of mail-outs, production of the materials. I've spoke to the Ms. Liu, who is the president of the organization, and she estimates those to be approximately $1 per mailing piece, and she expects that the city best be served by two mail-outs prior to the election, and there's approximately 8,000, between 6,000 and 8,000 households to which this mail-out would go. So you're looking somewhere between 12,000 and 18,000 additional dollars. I recognize that instruct us as to what option would be preferable to. One of the things that I have not discussed with both of them, simply because of lack of time, is whether or not removing the survey, the polling service, from this equation would, what effect that would have. In other words, they would say, what would be the real downside to that? But that may be a cost-saving measure that may be available to the city. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have on this.
There's any questions of our attorney? Yes.
Did you have a chance to check with Bill Statler from City of San Luis Obispo as a reference?
That is our plan. We have not done that yet.
Okay. In looking at the options, frankly, it's frightening, especially with the cost of the direct mail pieces, when you look at what's at risk versus what option B is with postage on it, you know, being $76,000, or I'm sorry, $66,000. Is there flexibility to work with them? I mean, you had talked about polling. What if they did phone banking instead or similar type of outreach?
It is my intent, if it's the desire of the council, to bring this item back to you in the first meeting of September to have much clearer answers to these types of questions. I want to get both of these people on the phone and talk to them about what are the areas of flexibility in this type of a proposal. And that's the information that I could provide you with to give you more ammunition in making a decision the first meeting in September.
Martin, are you confident we're going to get a response from the other vendor?
I'm fairly confident that we're not.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think that for obvious reasons, this being an election year, the people who are top-notch in this business at this point in time are very busy. And this is probably a job that is not, they may not be able to fit it into their schedule.
Have either of you touched base with Dave Mullinex from the League of California Cities? I know he has experience with campaigns, and I just don't know if he has other resources he might be able to share with us.
I have discussed the concept indirectly, and there was a discussion of a meeting on Friday that didn't occur, and that was one of the subjects that we were going to. So we're trying to get that meeting put together and when everybody can attend that, and that will be on the.
Okay. Thanks.
Councilmember Ekbon.
There's a couple things. One of was, Martin, this survey, is that to talk to 300 people to listen to their concerns or their arguments and then address a strategy on how to get out the message that it's a positive benefit?
My understanding that what is contemplated is something along those lines. I think that a survey basically asking people what they would, in the event that the measure is not successful and the general fund...
Absolutely. For the tax or against the tax? Is there a way to use that as a polling measure and say we're not going to go any farther because it's the survey shows it's such a strong lean one way or the other? Can we back out of a contract in the middle of this?
Well, that's certainly something that we can write into the language of the contract and see if it's acceptable. That's not a concept that I have discussed with...
Okay. Well, I'm not even sure that they would be asking the question. Are you in favor of... are you going to vote yes or no on this tax? Yeah.
I again, not being a polling expert or a public relations expert per se, I'm not sure that what exactly is the line of questions that they...
Okay.
Again, the point to stress is that the city... is not allowed to advocate for passage or failure of this measure. The only place where the city can expend any public funds is to educate the public as to what the effects would be if the measure is successful or if the measure is defeated. And these people are experts in doing that. They did exactly the same thing for the city of Lawndale and very successfully, where exactly the same issues were in place, the only difference being that it was approximately, I think, $1.4 million a year, 20% of their general fund was funded through the utility user tax. And because of the same issues that that City of Grover Beach is facing, they had to go back and validate the existing situation.
And how did that turn out?
They were successful.
But a much bigger numbers. That I think is you're talking about over $1 million a year impact to their.
It was, I think, the $1.4 million
right.
a year.
Right. Okay.
We're looking at $140,000 over even over the next 5 years.
That's I understand.
$750,000.
Is that? This is too short notice for me to support this.
And I understand that.
But my other question was, I understand we cannot spend city time, but is there a way for the city council and individual city employees and fire department people to band together to work the streets in an issue like this and not go out to a professional fees but have a lot of council people and police and firemen canvassing the streets in support of this? Is there a way to try and organize that kind of a response, or is that spending city funds?
Well, any time expended on campaigning that in any way is either paid for by the city or otherwise expends public funds is prohibited by law. In advocacy. Now, as far as individual action, anybody, council members, the city officials, employees, can obviously group together and campaign for a measure that they believe in.
Isn't it a lot like the school bond? You can do all of this, but it's like You can't have three of us together, nor can you have anything on city property.
City, you're talking about by the city manager. How about the individual council people?
Individual council people acting as individuals, again, are free to proceed in any manner they feel.
When they meet at the fire station and...
You can't even do that at the fire station, right?
That's my point. We
tried to mobilize and do the same thing with the league initiative.
Yes.
And with the exception of Chief Bradbury and a couple of other folks, we didn't have any participation that was measurable. And that's another important one. That's jobs. And I just don't think that's a reliable source to get the word out with this one either.
This is a direct impact on the city, which is also their jobs and their funding source.
They didn't think so last time.
Well, I don't see that they would be that effective. I kind of disagree with you, Dave. This isn't something that city employees know how to do. Here's a group of people that's their job. They've got a proven record on this exact issue, the Jarvis Amendment type stuff. They've proven that they've been able to campaign and make it work. And I think we're behind the eight ball. I think we're too late. We need to move on this, and I think that if we wait until September to deliberate this, we're behind the eight ball even farther. I think we need to get the information, and I think we need to have a special meeting next week. We need to move forward on this. There's just not enough time. We've only got 60-some days until the election, and that doesn't give us a lot of time to get pamphlets out, to get information from people in the way of polls, and find out how people feel so that we can find the information that they need to educate them on this. It's a very important issue. It's $140,000 a year, and we need to do this right. And I don't think a grassroots campaign will ever make this work. If you want to do that in conjunction with what's proposed here, that's all the better. But these people are professionals, and I think they're the only ones that are going to get us a positive vote on this issue.
I spoke with Ms. Liu on the timing of this because I had the same concerns that Councilmember Arnoldson just expressed. In her opinion, the drop-dead deadline for moving forward with this would be immediately after Labor Day, which is the day of our meeting.
Mayor Pro Tem Schultz.
No, I really don't have anything to add to the discussion. I think all the points have been hit on. I do like the direction. If staff is going to give them a call and see if there's some flexibility in whether we have to do the survey, and I think that would be something I'd be interested in hearing.
Okay. Councilmember Arnoldson made a suggestion of having to have a special meeting next week. Is that of any interest to make sure we get this going?
I'm available Monday if we want to do it. Martin, would you be able to have information by then?
I would hope that I would, but I can't
until you try.
Since I'm dependent on their response.
Well, we'd at least have...
Is that enough information?
Yes, and I will do my best to obtain the information and be able to provide it to you for the Monday meeting.
Thank you, sir. City Council agenda, none at this time. Public communications, anybody in the public that'd like to speak on anything that's not on this agenda? Seeing none? Okay. Council communications?
I had something, and one of them concerns our police chief. There's a rumor going around that the lieutenant's position is working out so well that you're considering not retiring. Is that is that true?
I got an invitation for a retirement party. I hope
well, I know.
$10 that I sent. No.
Yeah. Will you refund those?
Yeah.
John Bradbury, chief of police. I haven't heard that rumor.
No? Okay. I was just checking.
But who knows what disinformation is out there.
Okay. Second one was I'd like to congratulate Dee. You know, she's termed out as a council person for the city, but she's applied for and has been selected to be our school board representative because there's no other applicants running against her. So congratulations, Dee, on your new adventure this next year.
Thank you. It'll be hard to leave here, but on to...
We can come and visit.
No, I'm going to come back and visit so I can get the voicemail stuff.
Yeah,
you know.
You can call in your messages.
I'll be calling in.
The other one was a little more serious. Our fire chief left already, but I've noticed on a number of occasions he is out of the county fighting fires. He's down south or he's back in the Sierras, and I didn't know how often that happens or if that is a concern to anyone else that our fire chief is not around. And I didn't know if that was ever brought up at any kind of negotiations with when we talked about his services, how often he will be out. And I'm sure that's a volunteer type of situations where they put out a call statewide and some people enjoy responding. And I was just wondering if there's a concern of anyone else.
I thought about that too, David.
I'm not sure if you're asking me, but we did not specifically go into that commitment on his part. The city, likewise, is committed to mutual aid, not only among the cities in the Five Cities area, but as you recall, we responded to fires in the Los Angeles area last year, and we, Roy Grandy, Oceano, Pismo, CDF folks, all do that kind of activity, and it's something that's looked at on a statewide basis, and we figure out where areas can give up resources in order to deal with incidents in other parts of the state. And we also have, as part of the agreement, the oversight committee, and the oversight committee is we're trying to set up our first meeting and try to...
Mile away, Bob? I say that because that's what they used to call him, because several instances he was out of town when the major fires took place, and somehow they got put out.
Thank you. So, anyway, before I forget what I was saying, Chief Castle will be gone, and Chief Fiebig is actually in part of the California Mutual Aid System, and why it works is you contribute, and when you need help, help will be here. Is I don't think he's raising his hand to volunteer. He's actually on a management team, and there's the OES has regional management teams. So when that fire that he went up to in the Gold Country broke out, it wasn't just Chief Fiebig. It was multiple officers from San Luis Obispo County that went to become the command staff for that incident. So I don't think it's a pick-and-choose thing. I think he's just experienced enough that he's looked on his peers as competent and he's part of that team. If something were to happen while he was gone, I think it's important for us all to know that with the local mutual aid system, there's always battalion coverage in Pismo, so there's always going to be a chief officer in Pismo with the CDF contract. We're going to get that chief support if the incident gets big enough. And yeah, he's gone because it's summertime, but I don't think it's anything we need to worry about.
Well, Steve, also the training that both of our departments have trains for that. I mean, we train our junior officers to be CEOs or incident commanders, or whatever you want to. I guess they're incident commanders, and they're supposed to know how to handle that, whether he's homesick or whether he's 200-300 miles away. There are days that he may not be able to make it, and we do have that training in place to cover that. So. I talked to him a little while ago about the fact that he has to make two extra council meetings a month now, too. So, he is burdened heavily, but I think that Terry's the type of guy that wouldn't do it if he couldn't do it. So I respect him, and I think he's doing a great job, and I think he will continue to do a great job.
Okay. Is there any other council communications?
I had one thing real quick. We were talking technology earlier. I was curious, and I may have missed any updates, but I was curious regarding the Broadwire negotiations.
There are no Broadwire negotiations going on at this point. We have drafted language at least a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, it's been emailed to folks, and so that the ball's kind of in Broadwire's court at this point.
Okay. Thank you.
I had one more communications. I had two people unsolicitedly tell me that they felt that they were safer on Grand Avenue, and they did appreciate the stoplights that we put in. They feel like they get through town as quickly as they've ever gotten through. There's no holdups, but the traffic moves better as well as it did, and they feel that it's slower and there is more control over the speeds and stuff, so they're very positive feedback. I don't know what you guys have had, but.
And I like that wall at Oak Park. We could pass that on, too. I think that was money well spent. Okay. I've had two people ask me, why did we spend $25,000?
I have a question. I know that I had asked about this viewshed protection ordinance. I'm not so concerned about that, but what I am certainly concerned about is when we were dealing with the Moore household and there was direction given a long time ago, and I know staff is extremely busy, so I want to acknowledge that right now. But someone had come up to me and said, well, what happened to the issues of lot coverage and setbacks and treatments? And so I'm just kind of curious as to know, to get an update of where we are.
The consultant has completed their work. The ball is in our court right now. The concept that I was looking at is doing a workshop with the City Council and Planning Commission, both on the circulation element as well as the viewshed ordinance, and going into public hearings with the Planning Commission and then scheduling the City Council public hearing on both of those items. So.
If I could ask, I think you did a wonderful job with respect to the roof decks. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you did a fabulous job getting that, breaking that out, going to the commission, bringing it to the council. And that was kind of what I had envisioned on some of these other items when we were wrestling with this issue. I mean, that home is almost constructed, and we've had others that have come forward, and there are still the tools that I envision having for the commission with respect to lot coverage and setbacks. And so, I mean, if there is any way to break those components out of this viewshed protection ordinance, you know, I would be open to any suggestions.
Are you saying that the workshop, the joint workshop, is an unnecessary step in your mind, or?
I guess in my mind, I'm saying that this was direction that was given prior to Mr. Raper coming on board, so I can't really, I'm not pointing fingers at anyone.
No,
it's certainly a concern I have because there have been other projects that have come forward in that part of the city, mm-hmm. and so whatever we can do, I don't even know what to say to expedite this, but I think it is something that when we first brought this up and gave that direction, I thought there was a sense of urgency. And like I said, I know staff has got a lot of things on its plate, but, you know, I feel like I had said to the residents at the time, here's the direction that we're trying to go, and we're trying to make this process ease some of the pain in going through mm-hmm. that. And so that is kind of the frustration that I'm having with this.
Sure. Well, as I said, it's entirely in the staff's court. So as a commitment to you as a city council, we can look at the timeline and bring it forward.
So. Okay. So I guess the city manager had said, am I saying that the joint workshop is not necessary? I'm just wondering if you just take it to the Planning Commission, get their input, and bring it to this council for some direction. Would that eliminate a step for you,
Mr. Ray? It would eliminate some efforts and steps, yes.
Does that sound okay to everyone else?
Okay. Are you talking about just lot coverage? What else are you talking about? Viewshed? You're talking about?
I think in that viewshed ordinance, they were looking at issues of lot coverage. They were looking at issues of setbacks. They were looking at issues of the proportion of an upper floor to mm-hmm. the bottom floor. So things
yeah.
that we could quantify and try and...
And maybe shifting the upper floor left or right or north and south, east, west, to provide additional viewshed.
The salsa contest and the health fair and activities for children at the exploration station and the kiddie midway. So don't forget.
Has anybody else entered in the Dune Run?
Did you?
Sure.
Mm. Wow.
I'm impressed.
I'm walking. I'm not running, but.
Wonderful. Well, watch.
Anybody
you.
Else? Huh?
Well,
it says dune run, run, not dune walk, walk.
It's going to be dune limp, limp or something, maybe.
Wow. I'm impressed. That's why he had his mouth full. He was getting energy.
That's not a challenge, I hope.
Yes.
That's a challenge. That was a challenge.
Good.
Well, you don't know a challenge when you hear one.
We'll watch you. Also, whoever gave us these pins, they're very nice. Thank you.
Loan.
Okay, if there's nothing else on council communications, we'll move on to the improvement agency. Could we have roll call, please?
Here.
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 Here. Public communications.
Excuse
me.
Next time you do that, can you look that way, please?
I covered my mouth.
I know.
There's no public communications. We'll move on to consent. Is there a motion for the consent?
Move the consent calendar.
Second.
Can a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Scholz, second by Councilmember Lieberman. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, moving on to business. City Council Improvement Agency. See, the Buxton Community ID Retail Recruitment Program. Presentation of Phase 1 study results with consideration to undertake Phase 2.
Okay, I would just like to make a couple of introductory comments before we turn it over to Patricia Bell, who is with the Buxton Company. Basically, back in January, the council moved forward with the approval of a very exciting analysis that will strongly support our economic development efforts. And this is what we've been calling the Buxton Community ID Program. Basically, there are two phases of this work program. The first will be presented to you tonight by Patricia Bell, and it basically undertakes a lifestyle profile of our trade area by identifying what the residents within the trade area purchase and the types of stores and retailers that they go to. The second phase of the study involves matching our lifestyle profile with the profiles of major retailers so that we have basically a sense of the types of retailers that will have success if they were to move into our market. Again, Patricia Bell here is to share the results of the Phase 1 study with you. She made a similar presentation to the Rio Grande City Council last week, and they approved the direction to move on to Phase 2 jointly with us with a 5-0 vote. The key decision point for you tonight is to determine whether or not you want to proceed with the Phase 2 analysis. And I think the basic point that staff would like to make regarding Phase 2 is that it provides some color to our slogan of a map. With that, I would like to just turn it over now to Patricia Bell.
Well, good evening, Mayor Santos and council members. Thanks for having me, and of course, it's my pleasure to be here. As Suzanne's already given me in my introduction, my goal tonight would be to show you a brief PowerPoint description of Phase 1 and answer any questions that you might have. I'm aware that Suzanne has prepared a very concise staff report for you that kind of gives you, I guess, if you will, the cliff notes on our Phase 1 report. And so because this is fairly comprehensive in her notes, I'm just going to touch on the highlights of the Phase 1 report and then allow you, of course, to ask any questions that you might have as we go along. Okay? So just a quick review for I don't know how long it's been since we've addressed you previously, but Buxton is a company that works with both communities and retailers. Part of the reason why our studies are so effective is because, as we like to say, we speak retail. We have many members of our staff that are former vice presidents and presidents of large retail corporations. They've spent numerous years in the retail industry. And we have also, as a company, spent 10 years working with large retailers, helping them determine what type of site selection criteria they should use as they evaluate opportunities across the nation. And we realized during the course of our existence that that information would also be very valuable to communities as they seek to recruit retail to come to their communities. Currently, we have over 400 retail customers in approximately 80 cities that are our clients nationwide. Just a brief mention that we are in partnership with the League of Cities, and we are endorsed by CalEd as well. Moving into Phase 1, just a brief recap of Phase 1. The purpose of Phase 1 is to measure Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande's potential to recruit new retail, including restaurants. If Phase 1 is a favorable study, then, of course, at that point, as Suzanne's already mentioned, we would recommend that you move to Phase 2 because that's really kind of the meat and potatoes of what we do. That's where we will look at retailers that match your community. In Phase 1, what we do is we look at a retail trade area, and we ask the question, is there retail potential in your communities? And we look at things like lifestyle behaviors and psychographic profiling to determine whether or not your area has the types of traits that other retailers would be looking for. Just a quick project overview. As I said, we look at a retail site, we analyze its potential. And with that analysis, we will give you the information that you would need to make an informed decision as to whether or not you'd like to proceed on Phase 2. Just to remind you, the retail site that we looked at is Oak Park Boulevard and Grand Avenue. If you see the map here that's up on the screen, you will notice that over in the right-hand corner, I often get asked this question, usually at the end of the presentation, do you take into account existing retailers in our community? Do you take into account the shopping centers that are already here? We wouldn't want to get a report from you, you know, that has three or four retailers that we already have in our community. And the answer is yes. If you notice the graph on the right-hand side, there are several markers that would indicate major shopping centers, and we, of course, working with the city, would have a list of national retailers that are already here. What we do... We drew a 10-minute drive time trade area around your site. 10 minutes is kind of based on an ICSC standard. In very densely populated areas, urban areas, like, for instance, Los Angeles, an 8-minute drive time is kind of the standard. So we try to pick a drive time that is comparable and compatible with the type of area that we're studying. And typically in smaller, less densely populated areas, we are able to extend that drive time out a little bit. So that's why we chose 10 minutes in your case. Another interesting thing to point out, if you notice on the map, I'm going to try this nifty little, never used one of these before, so let's see what happens. Living on the edge right now. If you notice on the map, if you look at a 10-minute drive time, it actually gives you quite a trade area, and it doesn't, you know, stop at city boundaries. So you're looking at, you know, well north of Pismo Beach up here and all the way down south to Napomo and quite a ways over here on the east of your city. So it's quite a healthy trade area that would be incorporated in this study. That wasn't so bad. All right. Just a couple of statistics in this trade area. We noticed the traffic counts. We've been able to document them from 18,600 to 21,630 vehicles per day. That's a very healthy traffic count in that area. Some demographics that are associated with this 10-minute trade area, again, keeping in mind that it does not stop at city boundaries but incorporates the trade area that I just highlighted. Your 2003 estimated population in that area is at 55,666. You have a positive population growth of 13.86%. Your 2003 estimated households were 22,473, average household income of 64,392. Residential property value averaged at 244,509. Again, that is based obviously on property tax records, not on current market values, and vehicles per day at the upward end of 21,630. Now, once we've established some basic indexes on the trade area using multiple databases and proprietary information that we subscribe to, and those were just some of the highlights that I kind of touched on today, there is quite a breakdown of demographic and trade area information in the binders that have been provided to the city. But once we have looked at the trade area, what we begin to do at that point, and where it's really of interest to the retailers, is we look at the households in that trade area. Now, utilizing a common methodology that most retailers understand and respond to, we know that every household in America falls within 1 to 50 segments. We have information and data on over 100 million households in our databases. What that simply means is that retailers have begun to profile consumers and their buying habits. So every one of us falls into one of these 50 segments. I might be a segment 10. Councilmember Arnoldson, you might be a segment, 21. Suzanne might be a segment 14. We all have different buying habits associated with our behaviors and different types of consumer profiles based on what we do, what we like, what we make, what we drive, what we listen to, where we eat, and so forth. I might be able to tell vaguely that you're in California, vaguely that you're miles long or wide. I might know your population and some of the real surface-level information, but psychographics will yield the type of information that retailers are looking for to make a decision about whether or not consumers that they're interested in reside in this trade area. Interestingly enough, your profile of your trade area is a very healthy one. You have 8 dominant segments representing over 75% of your trade area and comprising of about 17,000 households. And we'll actually look at your dominant segments a little more closely. I'm not going to go through all 8 of them in the interest of time, and I don't want to see anybody yawning, but I am going to touch on the top 5 segments and just kind of give you an overview of what they mean. Segment 4 is one of your dominant segments, and we call that the midlife success segment. We have nice little names for every one of the segments. We know that people in segment 4 live in suburban areas. They own their own homes. They're likely to obtain financial services online. They read news and travel magazines, and that is just a small sampling. There's actually quite a detailed description of the segments in your binders. But more importantly, we know what kind of consumer spending habits they have, and we can index them over 1,500 categories. So we know, for instance, people in segment 4 are highly likely to purchase gasoline with a credit card. They own a fireplace, typically. They eat at Jack in the Box frequently. They own racquetball equipment and electric juicer. It's kind of funny, huh? electric juicer, where did that come from? But if you look at the index number on the right-hand side, the index is a mean index of 100, 100 representing an average number. Anything over 100 indicates a high likelihood for that behavior, and the index goes up to, I believe, about 500. So occasionally we do see index numbers, at 423, which would mean it's almost certain that a person in that segment would do that particular activity or purchase that particular product. Segment 10 was another dominant segment in your trade area. Those are people we call home sweet homers. They're married couples with few, if any, children at home. They live primarily in the suburbs. They have a great deal invested in their homes. They're likely to lease their most recent vehicle. Moreover, in terms of what they purchase and what they do, we know they own a coffee grinder, a stationary bike, and they're very likely to play golf. Now, you laugh, you think, okay, that's really weird. But again, if you think of it in terms of a retailer's perspective, I'm looking at Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande, and I'm looking at it from a population standpoint or an average household income standpoint. That may only show a very partial picture. But if I sell golf equipment and I know that there are, 14,000 potential golf customers in this trade area, well, now we're talking a different story. Now we have a dialogue that's worth having to me as a retailer. Segment 15 is another segment that we saw a tremendous dominance in your area. We call that the Great Beginning segment. Those are households with 1 or 2 young adults. Slightly higher than the national average income. They tend to live in renter-occupied housing. They're likely to purchase gas with a debit card. They eat at TGI Fridays, visit Disneyland, and rent of over 40,000 tourists who visit this area through one of the local hotel management companies here. And we were able to profile the tourists that come here. Now, while you will not be able to use your tourism profile as part of your trade area profile, you will be able to show retailers the icing on the cake, if you will, that not only do we have a tremendously strong trade area that lives here year-round, but we also have this profile of the tourists who come here, and they are these type of people who purchase these type of products and do these types of things. Basically, if you see the chart down below, the dominant segments in the tourism profile nearly matched the dominant segments in the trade area. So it was interesting. They were almost a mirror image of each other, with the exception of three segments, segment 1, segment 5, and segment 14. And I've included detailed descriptions of those segments in your binders if you're curious to know descriptions on them and what they do and what they buy and where they eat and all that. That is in the binders and has been prepared for you. One last thing that phase one does yield is retail trade potential analysis for your trade area. This slide shows just major categories. These categories are actually broken down quite detailed in terms of what types of products are listed in each category. For instance, in the household furnishings and services category, you would see a breakdown of mattresses, sofas, kitchen, you know, furniture, that type of thing. So it would be broken down by type of product. But just for purposes of you know, discussing the phase one analysis today, we just chose to show you the major categories and what they add up to in terms of the retail trade potential for your area. It's a very healthy $855.5 million. That should, again, be a number and a figure that should be attractive to retailers who are looking at this trade area. Just briefly, as we analyze your retail site trade area, we have been able to document that you have sufficient potential in your trade area to attract, we feel, a very good mix of retailers to this area. Excuse me. And it would be our recommendation that you would move to phase two based on what we found. Now, I just included a couple of quick slides about the retail recruitment packages that are part of our phase two, because I'm going to assume that you would probably like to know, well, what exactly does phase two do? We kind of understand phase one paints a portrait of who we are and what we have to offer, and what do we do in phase two? Well, we take that portrait that we've painted of you, and we begin to look for retailers that match that portrait. It's kind of like a, if you will, a high-tech dating service. So we're looking for retailers that match that profile. All retailers out there have a particular type of profile that they tend to look for as they're evaluating any type of site expansion possibility. We prepare detailed recruiting packages for you. Probably the one item that I would just draw your attention to, they're actually quite detailed packages, and I wouldn't, in the interest of time, go through everything that's in the package. But one of the things that would be in the packages is a retailer match report, and I know you're getting a sample of that right now. In the retailer match report, what we do is we and clearly understand what you're communicating, that you're dominant in all the segments that they are looking for dominance in. We also, at the bottom of that retail trade score sheet, we will give you some information that you can share with the retailers in terms of total population and households, dominant segment household numbers, and daytime population, which is important to restaurants. We will list what the typical retailer number is, as well as what your community's number is, so that they can clearly see side by side what they are looking for and what you can provide. So in this example, if you look at the third line down, the retailer dominant segment households, in this example, XYZ company, let's just say they are Mervyn's. Mervyn's is typically looking for a retailer dominant segment household count of 9,772 people. In our example, this particular community had 12,870. So again, it's kind of a, you know, no-brainer. The retailer should be able to look at that and see, wow, we normally are looking for a trade area of 9,700 people. You have a trade area of 12,800. Yeah, that's a strong match. That's something that we would respond to. So, you know, again, as a recap, you have a growing population and household count. You have eight dominant segments that represent over 75% of your trade area. Both your communities are growing. There's many positive factors that were revealed in phase one. So at this time, it would be our recommendation wholeheartedly that you look at a phase two analysis, which would then yield your list of retailers that would match your community.
Is there any questions of this report? Councilmember Lieberman?
A couple questions. Before we move on, maybe I should start with the example you just handed us.
Mm-hmm.
So we come back and we do phase two, and we'll go back to your Mervyn's example. Mervyn's is a good fit for somewhere in this buying area. There's no property to support the construction of that building. Is that all? I mean, have you plugged in parcels into the model?
No. What we do is before we engage in phase two, and I've already sent an email to the staff that I'm working with to let them know that we're looking for input from the city. One of the things that we ask is about square footage. We need to know, obviously, what type of square footage is available in the site so that we don't recommend a Target, for instance, if there isn't a particular location large enough to support a Target.
Okay, thank you. And I guess it's more of an observation that I'm looking for some help with. As I went through the different profiles versus what we've been working on and focusing on as far as developing the beach area and Grand Avenue and our vision for mixed use with a vision called it boutique cafes, whatever the hell that is. But anyway, sidewalk dining, we'll call it.
It sounds really cool.
I noticed that even the most affluent profiles were going to Jack in the Box, Carl's Jr., shopping at AM/PM Mini Market. And I don't think we need help finding more fast food restaurants. We have plenty. So I'm wondering if you could kind of make me feel better about that appearing in all the profiles as far as the relation.
I understand your comment. And I guess the two things that I would say to that is, number one, those restaurants fall into a category called QSR, and so for ease of terminology, I'm going to refer to them as QSRs, quick service restaurants. That would be any type of a fast food type of a restaurant. And you correctly noted that people from all walks of life typically eat and participate in those types of restaurants. So when you're looking at your community, you have two different factors to consider. Number one, sales tax revenue is an important part of the retail attraction equation. Part of what retail attraction can and will do for your city is generate that tax revenue, and QSRs typically are a great source of that tax revenue. So just a note there. Secondly, it's a quality of life issue as well. Your observation that we don't need help in attracting the jack-in-the-boxes of the world. It could be true. It could be that, you know, 3 years from now, a Sonic drive-thru might find you, or, you know, 2 years from now, an In-N-Out might find you, but how do you know they might find you and not Pismo, or you and not X number of, you know, any other places? And could it take 3 or 4 years, or could it take 5 years? The question is, if you know that there's a demand in your trade area for that type of a restaurant, and as long as it's a balanced list that reflects other types of businesses and restaurants and retail that you would like to attract, there is a place typically on the list for some type of QSR. I don't know if that answers your question.
Okay, and let me just follow it up then. So QSR, as we're describing it, I mean, in Grover Beach, we're pretty well represented by QSR-type businesses already, given that we have Grand Avenue. And I mean, in your experience with the phase two studies, is it pretty typical that, as you called it, a balance? Is there a balanced representation with QSRs versus retail and different dining establishments?
We do try very much. So obviously, anytime a city retains our services, we already there's an implicit understanding that you're not engaging us to, you know, bring in a row of QSRs. So, yes, of course, we're trying to deliver as balanced a list as we possibly can. And I've had a discussion with Suzanne. In the instance that we are able to match more than 20 retail restaurant entities for your city, i.e., let's say we come back with a very strong match list of 35, and this is a strictly hypothetical example because I can't tell you how many we will find at this point in the game. But let's just say we come back with 35. We will then work with the city and allow you to pick the ones that you would most likely like to go after versus others. So we will work with you, obviously. But it's so hard to say what's typical on average because there is no such thing. That's why we are retained by cities, is that every city is unique, every trade area is unique. And some cities, you know, I've studied cities where they would be thrilled to have a Dairy Queen. Mm-hmm. And then there's other cities that, you know, say, hey, we have a different vision, and or we wouldn't be thrilled to have that. So,
okay, my last question is, you present phase two to us, mm-hmm. and it's got the potential matches. What goes on with the Buxton relationship at that point? Because you're representing a lot of these retailers. Are you helping us with recruitment at that point, or are you just providing us the data?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked that. We do represent quite a few retailers, but we do not.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate
you're
it.
You're welcome.
Councilmember Ekbom.
Patricia, here's the question you always get asked, you said. You have the population, you have the buying habits, you have the income. Where do you factor in the existing businesses? When you have a location and it says that there's this level of income, this number of people, and these are the habits they have, and it would support a drugstore at Oak Park and Grand, and there's three or four other national chain drugstores already there, that's not a match, really.
Right.
Where do you factor in the existing businesses in your equation?
In phase two, we get a list of national retailers with the city's help, also with our own databases and our own field search. We're going to look at what kind of businesses already exist here, and we're going to automatically restrict those from our search. So obviously, if we find that, you know, there's a tremendous demand for a drugstore here, but you already have four drugstores, then that demand is probably already being met. And so, therefore, we wouldn't come back and recommend a drugstore in our
evaluation. So you do analyze.
Yes.
Existing. Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
You're welcome.
Councilmember Arnoldson.
Okay. I guess, I don't know if my questions are going to be very, I guess where I'm going is, once you identify, let's say, like a Mervyn's, is a list big enough that we're going to be able to recognize some of these businesses that are, or some of these companies that are big enough to be profitable to our community and helpful for our community to buy? But are we going to have, my problem with this whole scenario is trying to envision that we have space to locate some of these places. Like we talked about Mervyn's, but Mervyn's is usually in a center that has two or three other major anchors. It's not going to stand alone. So I see some of those bigger companies like that not being apropos to us. And a lot of instances like that where you identify a business, how do you then take that business and put it in the community when we really don't have major areas of commercial property that's accessible to expansion, such as a freeway that's an off-ramp area where there are 50 acres that are still available. We have such small units of property along Grand Avenue. How do you get some of those anchors to come in? Because they do like to have other anchors with them.
Yeah, well, yeah, you've correctly noted that. I would say that I regret now using Mervyn's as an example because
It doesn't have to
really
be Mervyn's.
Just a
it could be a big restaurant. I mean, a well-known restaurant of some type, but.
Right, but with the city's input, we're going to get a list of square footage availability. And so we already know what type of square footage different retailers need. Therefore, we're not going to come back with a recommendation for a retailer that would exceed the space available. And with over 3,500 retailers and restaurants to analyze, I would be willing to bet there's got to be at least 20.
That they have there, the business they have there. It's hard for me to convey this. I mean, it's hard to... Go ahead, Suzanne.
Actually, yeah, let me kind of respond to that because you're absolutely right. There's so many different forces coming in all together to make this happen. But, for example, when we participated in the International Council of Shopping Centers, one of the pieces of information that we gleaned from that was this whole concept of lifestyle centers. And these are types of retail opportunities that do not have anchors. They're not traditional malls. They have more of a downtown setting. Now, we were talking to the developers that put in the infrastructure, that build the buildings. With the Buxton piece, if the council so desires to move forward, the other piece of the puzzle we will have to help bring these investors on is the type of commercial and retailers that they could bring on board. So the pieces of information kind of go together. It's no different than looking at our interest in the Beachfront Lodge conference facility. You know, we have had discussions with developers where they'll say, well, we would like to bring on this type of resort, or maybe the city would like to see this type of quality resort, but we don't see you supporting the retail in your surrounding area that would bring on that level of investment. If we do phase two of the Buxton study, that's another piece of the puzzle. Now, maybe we will find that we are not able to attract that higher level type of retailer. We don't know. But by not doing the study, you don't know what your full potential is on the lifestyle infrastructure center investment. It all comes together.
Well, it sounds kind of expensive to find out, too. The other thing that I see, and just I'm just going to throw out some stuff here with the study, is that I know people that drive to Thousand Oaks to shop or for a car or for clothing. We all go to San Luis, and that's more than a 10-minute drive. We go to Santa Maria to shop. Even though we have this database, what's going to keep us from or people from the inner area from going still to San Luis or Santa Maria if there's a competing store up there that's cheaper or better?
I might turn this one back to Patricia, because, again, it's getting into the drive time. San Luis and Santa Maria are not in our trade area. Right.
But, see, I guess that's what I'm saying is I don't really know that I believe in the drive time. I believe in the competition. I believe in the availability of a product. Because I don't drive to Costco because Costco's 10 minutes away. I drive down there because there's product there that I need to purchase, and it's not available in this community. And the drive time has nothing to do with it. I shudder when I say, it's an hour-long round trip. If we had one here, I'd love to do that. I'd even go to San Luis before I went to Santa Maria. So I guess I'm having a hard time buying into drive time.
Ron,
totally.
I guess my question would be is if in our trade area, in our 10-minute trade area, the opportunities existed for you to shop here instead of San Luis Obispo or Santa Maria, wouldn't you do that?
Yes, but that's what I'm saying. Once again, I don't see those pieces of property being available here, other than maybe Aurora Grant.
To deal with the catch-22 that we've already dealt with, and there was the thing that Suzanne was talking about when we went to ICSC, what we were saying is we want to get a lodge complex conference center, and we've talked to a number of different potential developers besides the one that already has been participating in the process. And they say, well, part of what makes this attractive for us is if you have high-end retail associated with that. And so you talk to high-end retail folks, and they say, well, the thing that's missing is you don't have the high-end hotel or lodge conference center. And it's how do you break that catch-22? Well, one way to do it is to be able to show the high-end retail folks there's a market for you here. And not only that, we're working with the state on developing the lodge conference center. And so it's a package deal. And part of the tools that we would need to sell the package deal could come out of the community ID program.
Okay. The vision's not with me, but anyway. The other thing I kind of wanted to mention is, like, when you were talking about the picket fence things, it seems like some of these 50 categories that you have are kind of like being a part of a astrology thing. I mean, you can look at an astrology deal and say, oh, I could be a Sagittarius. Wait a minute, I'm a Capricorn. I mean, you fit any one of those categories with a caveat. And that's the same with some of these things. I see that I could fit in about 10 or 12 of these, but I don't fit into any one exactly. I really, you know, like even though the white picket fence thing that you gave here, one of the things to be in white picket fence is have a snowblower, and I don't know anybody in the town that has a snowblower. So that's one of the lifestyles that was identified for this community. So, you know, I don't know. This vision's really tough for me. I just got to say that.
Okay, let me just address that. I think it's important that we have clarity on that. Remember that that is a small sampling. We just randomly reach in and sample over 1,500 categories. So while you may not own a snowblower in this community, if you fall into that segment, whether you live in Grover Beach, California, or you live in Peoria, Illinois, where they do use snowblowers, you will have the same types of buying patterns across the nation. So it's important to understand what the segmentations represent. All segmentation is designed to do is to help retailers make informed decisions about where they locate their stores. Again, let's say, Ron, you and I are neighbors, okay? I live right next door to you here in Grover Beach, and we both make the exact same amount of money. But you drive a Land Rover, and I drive a Taurus, and you golf, and I don't. And you eat at Applebee's, and I never eat at Applebee's. We have different buying habits, and retailers are sophisticated. They understand this. It's really simple. Just boil it down into a real simple sentence. All a retailer wants to know is, like Ron said, how many of my customers are here? If I'm Nevada Bob's and there's only 18 golfers in this city, no amount of lobbying on your part is going to get me to come here. And so what our program is designed to do, Community ID, is to take away the gut instinct of trying to go after retail. A community has several options. You can watch your sales tax dollars leaking to San Luis and Santa Maria. Are you going to get, you know, surface level demographic information that we can offer you? Would you consider coming here? That's probably not going to net you, or if it did, it would be such a long process that perhaps it would take you years and years to get on their radar. And remember that, you know, addressing your question about putting the cart before the horse, you have to look at it as an overall strategy. Retailers are looking 3 to 4 years out where they're going to locate their stores. Anything that's being built today was already decided on back in 2000. So if you're not doing something today to put your beacon on a hill, get your name out there on their radar, you're just basically taking your chances. And you're in an area where you've got multiple cities that are very close together, and they're all very aggressively looking for ways to, you know, build their community and attract retail. And simply put, Community ID is a scientific, data-backed way of portraying your resume and competing with other cities that are doing the same thing. It's no longer a gut feel. We hope, please, will you look at us, that type of a dialogue. It is now, we've done a study. We've used methodology that we know you understand and you respond to. This is not just Buxton's methodology. This is methodology that we have used because this is what retailers use. And we've done our homework. We know who we are. And we know that you, Mr. Retailer, have a very high likelihood of success if you were to locate in our retail trade area. Would you have a dialogue with us about that? And we give you the data to back it up.
I will give an example. Having a hair salon, we have gotten clientele from the valley and mm-hmm. different areas because through their, they're in their trailers and so forth and coming through. Mm-hmm. Others mm-hmm. have told others that we do services that other salons don't do, maybe because we're old. But, you know, we use razors, but some of the younger ones don't. We do back combing, some of the other ones don't know how and stuff. There's women that come into our place of business that look for a certain size shoe because they have narrow feet, so they go to the shoe tree that carries that particular thing. So there is different things in the retail business that people do look for, and they talk about it. Do you know where this and this is? Yes, there was a lady this weekend wanted to know where she could get large cans of peaches because she was making peach cobbler in their RV because the family was coming over. So that was something else that you hadn't thought about, but that was discussed and stuff. And she wanted to know where Smart and Final was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, as a tourist myself to this area, staying frequently at my mother-in-law's RV down the road, I can tell you that that is absolutely true. You know, it's tourism. You have a tremendous potential with your tourism profile here. It gives you an edge over some of the other cities that don't have that. And as Suzanne and I were discussing earlier, you know, it's a good idea to take advantage of that and grow your city around that today, putting that vision into place. You can be proactive or you can be reactive. It's kind of wherever you want to go.
And I know there's a lot of women who come and shop at Roses because it's more specialized. People from the valley that come over here. Yes, Mayor Pro Tem Scholes.
Thank you. I get a turn.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Sure.
Patricia, thanks for that presentation. The one thing, and I have to agree with where Councilman Arnoldson was going, and I think some of the others have talked about this, is
that could happen anyway today, right? If I was a retailer, I could take my pick of any of those communities today.
It could happen today, but we're not spending $30,000, $40,000 to have it happen today.
Well, yes, and I would say my way that I would say that would be you're investing that money as an opportunity to go out there and recruit the right retailers for your community and open up a door and a dialogue with them that may not otherwise happen for you based, again, on just surface-level demographics. How would you – let me just ask you this. If you did not engage Buxton to give you a Phase 2 report and identify the retailers that would be appropriate for you to market yourselves to, how would you go about marketing your community?
Through D-Salon.
Sounds like a really good plan. She's doing really well.
Well, I don't want to answer – I'm not going to answer that question.
I'm only kidding.
Because I'd like to get through mine. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Hopefully I'm not rude. Could you maybe tell me, do you have – you obviously have profiles on certain retailers. Are there retailers out there who are not looking for highway visibility, easy on and off access, the things that – we can't offer because you have lumped this whole trade area. And so are there retailers out there like a Pier 1 or someone who, when I say, hey, 4th and Grand would be a great location, then, you know, that's something that they may be open to.
Absolutely. As Suzanne has correctly noted, there are many trends in the retail community, and not all of them are dependent upon highway access or highway visibility to be a viable opportunity. And, you know, Barnes & Noble, Pier 1's a great example. There are many retail opportunities that are well-suited for a street that may not have immediate highway access. Victoria's Secret.
Isn't here in the competition is there's no lawnmower repair service except one in the whole 5 cities area.
Mm-hmm.
And
no, that's okay.
Okay, I've been very patient, so which is something new for me.
It's working.
I think in your presentation, Patricia, you had said that one of the purposes of doing this is so that the city council or the city can decide if we want to invest in the infrastructure. Now, when you say infrastructure, my mind goes to storm drains and streets and things of that nature. Is that what you're alluding to, or is it something different when you use the term infrastructure?
Well, you'll pardon my relative ignorance of those types of improvements in a city, but I can tell you that with respect to retail, infrastructure improvements, examples of that would be curb cuts, meaning accessibility on and off the street. It would be signage and permitting processes and that type of infrastructure. Availability, as we've already noted, of different types of retail pads or vacant land or that type of thing.
Okay, because, yeah, the reason I bring that up is I think we have some sites that may work for retailers, but we don't necessarily have all the infrastructure in place, and it's something that the agency has brought up on several occasions. And so I'm thinking, is this study going to say, yes, it's okay for you to invest that because the potential is extreme?
Would paint a favorable profile for you to say, yeah, we have potential here.
Okay. And I think I had maybe two more questions. And the first is, have you identified a city that doesn't have retail potential? Have you come across a situation like that?
Yes.
Good question.
Okay.
Yes, we have. And that's why we do our study in two phases. So it's not our goal to, you know, charge a city a flat fee to come back and be able to, and unfortunately have to say, we're not able to document sufficient potential for you to attract new retail.
Okay, and then the last question is, have you had situations where, let's say, a community has gone through and done the study, and then a builder has come on board, and they went to share that information, and they said, no, thank you, I have my own people who do these type of studies? I know that's a tough question.
Well, yeah, based on the fact that I'm not always privy to, you know, we have clients nationwide. I'm not always privy to what goes on in other communities that aren't part of my territory. But my educated response would be, it would be very foolish for a developer or a builder to take that path. What you're basically saying is that, hey, I've got the magic list. I already know who would be successful in this trade area based on a lot of data. Mm-hmm. And, you know, typically developers and builders will have relationships, as you've noted, but that doesn't always guarantee that a retailer is willing to come to that particular area. Those developers typically have shopping centers in multiple areas, and while they may have a relationship with Elephant Bar in this community, they aren't necessarily going to convince Elephant Bar to come to that other community. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why somebody would do that, but is it possible? I suppose.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Steve.
Ron's comments triggered another question for me, and I guess it's more of a question to staff. If we proceed with phase two, obviously we're talking about parcels that are available. What about parcels that are in the redevelopment zone that we can say are underutilized or blighted or
yes,
might have a future?
Yeah.
I mean, are those going to be identified for Buxton?
I would say absolutely. And I thank you for clarifying that. It's not just where you might have a shop like Beach Place that's looking for a retailer. I mean, we're looking at the whole vision. So the pieces of the puzzle that we would share when we're working out with the ICSC groups would be the Buxton results, our underutilized properties, which was a huge hit at the last conference, the community's vision, the council's support for doing like the land use element update. I mean, it's all a very important package, and not to forget, again, the plans that are going forward with the Beachfront Lodge conference facility, all very integral.
So literally, Buxton's going to get something similar to the zoning map for Grand Avenue. I don't want to go on record as saying this property is a key target, but, I mean, we talk about the beach entrance. We talk about 4th and Grand. There could be an entity in operation there today. Is that going to be part of the database that's going to form these opinions?
Okay, but what Buxton is going to be doing in phase two is giving us 10 binders with 10 opportunities for us to go out and recruit specific kinds of retailers. Self in this picture as part of the retail experience in Grover Beach in a lifestyle, Main Street, mixed-use kind of environment.
Okay, let me try this again, because I think maybe I posed the question in a bizarre manner. Let's just pick out, we'll quit picking on Mervyn's, let's say TGI Fridays that showed up in one of these documents. And if we don't supply Buxton with parcel information, whether it's in use now or not, is that going to preclude a match when we get the binders?
Well, again, because we ask the city up front for square footage limitations and requirements from them, if you tell us we don't have room for any retailer over X number of square feet, yeah, it would preclude us from being able to put that on your list.
So then I guess what I'm asking staff is, are you intending to show potential sites that maybe a developer says, yeah, I know someone's there today, but I'm going to go acquire that because I see a good fit with this entity that Buxton's put in the book?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes. I don't want to take anything off the wish list that we're going to get from Buxton if we go down this road, just because maybe there's something underutilizing that land right
yeah.
now.
Actually, there was a statement made by the consultant that did our visioning exercise that's going in the land use element. And he asked the question of, like, okay, what is your market potential? Okay, we're doing the idea of what types of retailers we can attract. But what is the market potential to give us a feel of how much land should we zone commercial, mixed use, industrial, whatever? remember that question. I thought it was a very valid question. And so that's another piece of the puzzle that comes into all of this. So when we started talking with, is it David Early, mm-hmm. I believe, we're already starting to look at that potential for square footage. Not, we're together because it's looking at the underutilized property. We're not limiting ourselves just to what's vacant today.
Okay, so.
Is that?
I'll stop. But yes, the answer is yes, we're going to provide all that information to Buxton.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
So where's the best place for me to open my snowblower shop? I'll repair the mowers, too.
Hey, you make some money.
Right next to my Boston Market.
All right.
I think they're bankrupt in California.
Mayor Pro Tem Schultz.
Yeah, I think Steve and Ron have brought up very good points. And this sort of gets back to your comment about the cart before the horse. Is there a way in which you can tell us what square footage these retailers are looking for? Because then that is what is going to be used to say, yes, here's a potential match as far as the land goes and the standards go. Because we heard from Mr. Perkins when we did visioning that we've got, the CV, VCC zone that basically allows a 50% lot coverage. So, you know, I mean, I don't know how – I think we are stuck in that classic dilemma of the cart before the horse. Well, how do we resolve that issue? And would you give us that information before staff identify? I know, that's a tough one.
If I understand your question correctly, you're asking me, can I give you a list of what kind of square footage requirements different retailers have prior to giving you a list of retailers who match?
Yes.
Well, we have a list of over 3,500 retailers, so it'd be pretty.
I know.
I'm sure that no.
On the southeast corner of Grand and Fourth could accommodate this, or because we have small commercial pieces out there that the agency would have to be involved with to try and stitch together land large enough to attract, let's say, certain retailers or certain lifestyle centers.
There is a publication that we looked through at ICSC that did list out, my numbers are correct, I think roughly 80, 90, 100 types of retailers that fit the lifestyle profile. And many of them did identify mm-hmm. their kind of square footage needs. We've also done a lot of work on the internet coming up with this type of research as we're trying to put our puzzle pieces together. But I think in terms of moving into phase two, we haven't talked about this staff level, but my inclination would be to look at maximum coverage capabilities, not under the current ordinance, but if we had a parking district, if we had those kinds of things. So you're looking at the larger level. Then we get our list, which probably starts coming down in September, end of September is my guess.
It's about 45 days.
And you start pulling things downward. But there are multiple pieces of the puzzle that come together all at the same time for success.
I think, can I jump in? I think when I said cart before the horse, what I envisioned when we did the visioning process, when we kind of got a map of where the community felt we were going commercially or retail-wise, I kind of envisioned that Suzanne's job would be, or someone on our staff's job at that point would be, to break that down block by block and possibly just go to those blocks and say, this is what the community envisions. You own one building in this block. Your next door neighbor has one. There's four other buildings on this block. Would you be interested if I could talk the other three or four or five property owners into some kind of an arrangement? Are you interested in redeveloping? Are you interested in doing something to potentially increase the use of your property? It's very underutilized. No, thank you, not interested. You move down to the next block. At least if we find a couple of blocks where we have, like we did on Grand Avenue between 9th and 10th Avenue, 9th and 10th on Grand, if we find a couple of blocks that are, quote, those blocks that are willing to do something like that, then I see the availability of something like the Buxton Company where we say, okay, we've got one whole block that wants to redevelop. They're going to be condemned on a friendly basis. They all want to be involved in this. What kind of businesses can we bring in? But so that's kind of how I saw this thing going working. And I don't know if that's pie in the sky or what, but
Mayor, if I could, I think you're exactly right, Ron, and I think the point is that we would not be identifying for Buxton a specific site, but rather the parameters for them to search their database. So if they, it's just kind of like what Mayor Pro Tem Scholz was saying, is 50,000 square feet too big? Is that something we can't accommodate? If it is, then that's an outward parameter on that.
Some developer, some owners.
But mm-hmm. Some of those owners aren't ready to sell yet, Ron. We've been talking to them.
That's therein lies the one of the issues. Yeah. You're right.
If I might add to that discussion, one valuable piece of information for local developers or local property owners is understanding what the potential is. Mm-hmm. You know, when you look down Grand Avenue, quite frankly, you see a lot of vacant lots. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of small buildings. It's hard to envision that, boy, can we really get something bigger and better than, I'm not even going to say a retailer, but a small type of fast food kind of joint. We don't want to sell for a fast food joint. We're not interested. Mm-hmm. But, hey, if you had a different type of retailer that would mix and people could start seeing the potential.
Well, that's kind of what I'm saying. I think we need like a test block or a block that we accomplish one, such as the beachfront people did, the beach place did. If we could put one of those together, maybe the people that Dee is talking about would be more willing to sell. Maybe they'd say, oh, yeah, you know, I can see the vision. I can see this happening.
Yeah, I think what is beneficial is you do have a couple of mixed-use projects that are in the discussion stages. Mm-hmm. Beach Place, of course, is a gem. I think what would be unfortunate is if you had some mixed-use projects go forward and they didn't have the vision to reach out to perhaps some of the higher end type of retail that we just don't believe we have mm-hmm. the capability, but we do. And that's where this type of data would assist. But
okay.
We don't have a place where you can restring your tennis rackets either, Ron. We have lots of tennis courts around here. Okay, is there any other questions?
I just don't see how we can identify these sites unless we know what size the center or the retailer is. I think this is all great. I think it's great to identify potential matches. I've talked to numerous people who've expressed interest in improving and investing in our community. And what it always boils down to is when it is more than one landowner and they have to negotiate with more than one landowner, it is not an attractive thing to do. And so while I don't want to limit us, and I would agree, that's the stark cold reality that we are dealing with. So if there is a way that we can do this and not be site-specific, and we can say a retailer of this size, and then the agency has to find a way to step forward, and if it means exercising eminent domain over properties, then that would work. Now, I think there's a flaw with that, but I'm not going to go into that either. But I just don't know if we're just going too far in this phase too, saying we're going to give you underutilized sites without really knowing who are we really targeting.
I think it's just all you need to know is a range of square footage, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
They don't need to know where.
No. I don't have to have a specific site. I just need to know, as you've already correctly noted, limiting parameters. If you know that you can't accommodate a retailer who requires a minimum of 100,000 square feet, like a Costco. But
that's an easy one.
Then.
That's an easy one, though. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a certain size that we want to say to them, this is what we're looking for. And then, obviously, the onus is going to be on the builders and the improvement agency to go out and help them put together these multiple pieces of land.
Mm-hmm. Well, John, why couldn't you say a city block? Why couldn't you make that a maximum somehow? You're not going to give up city streets for any developer, and so.
Well, yeah, I guess you could do that. I'm just trying to figure out, is that really based in reality? I think maybe that's my issue.
We're trying to do too much here, I think. If you're going to identify a retailer, other person, very likely a developer of some kind, is going to be the person developing it. He's going to go out and try and locate the property with this retailer sitting back there waiting to rent it after he builds it.
I understand.
So it's
that.
His job to, well, to go out and try and package the right-sized property.
I guess my concern is that there aren't any right-sized properties. Well, I shouldn't say that. There aren't any large pieces of property that are under one ownership. I think what we are finding is that we have got, if we say a city block, you're talking eight different owners that I can tell you, these builders, when you say there are eight different owners, they're going to say thanks, but no thanks. I mean, that's the stark reality of it.
Well, I can tell you, if we go out to eight different owners without a developer and a retailer ready to go on something, they're all going to say, come back to me when you've got a retail with some bucks, and we'll talk about it. Yeah. You want to line up people without any backing. You need that retail and a developer ready to go, and then you start trying to.
I guess
to
all I'm trying to do, all I guess I'm all I'm trying to do is find a way for us to say we want a retailer, and these are the parameters, and then we can go and find the potential sites. I think that's kind of where I'm at, because I think this is still the easy part as far as I'm concerned.
That's exactly the model, but nobody, Buxton does not need to know individual sites and whether it's vacant or underutilized. They just need to know the parameters to search the database of 3,500 retailers, and we say, you know, eliminate anything over 50,000 square feet or 28,000 square feet or whatever. Eliminate anything that is QSRs or whatever, and we get down to a manageable size that is reflective of the kind of thing that we want to go out after. Then it's our job to we have some tools to go out and market.
Would staff be bringing that back to this council, or are you looking for us to give you direction to make that determination? Because I'd be curious to know what the criteria you're going to use to say X number, you know, up to this square footage.
One of the things that we were looking at was trying to get phase two accomplished by a certain point in time so that we would have information to take with us to the next ICSC event that's happening in September, October. Mm-hmm. If we were trying to do that, regardless of input from the council, we probably could accomplish that. If we want to come back and go through that exercise with the council, we have a very strong, I think that our vision is very closely aligned with the data that say that we have every reason to expect that we ought to be able to attract the kind of businesses that we think we ought to have with regard to the vision. And I think that's what the data are saying, and that we ought to go through the exercise with the council and come up with those parameters, give them to Buxton, and see what hits we get.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, if there's no other questions, is there anybody in the audience who wants to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back. Where do we want to go, gentlemen?
Well, reality check. Being that the Arroyo Grande Council approved this phase two study unanimously 5-0, I'm going to make a motion that the council and agency both accept the report and direct city manager, executive director to enter into the phase two agreement at a cost to each organization of $20,500. I would like there, obviously, we've made compelling arguments, I believe, in the filter. I mean, we are different than Arroyo Grande in a lot of instances, so I'd like those to go into the negotiation for the agreement. That would be my motion.
Is there a second?
Yep, I'll second it.
Thank you. Okay, could we have roll call, please?
Yes.
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 Well, I think it's
better to have information than to not have it. I do have reservation, but I'm going to vote yes.
Yes. Okay. This is...
Patricia's on the payroll.
Is adjourned. Now we'll go back to closed session. It is the intention of City Council to meet in closed session concerning the following items. One, with conference with labor negotiator pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. City Manager, Administrative Services Director, Human Resources Coordinator with the represented employee group, the GBPOA. Two, Public Employee Performance Evaluation pursuant to Government Code Section 54957, Employee City Attorney.